meeting. Ms. Vaught, note the roll. Members, there's a number of materials in your packet that we'll get to. The one with your name on it is actually going to be your homework assignment for tonight, and we'll talk about that at the end of the meeting.
It's a take-home.
A take-home assignment. What we'll be doing today, just for a little housekeeping, is we will start at this meeting and hear testimony on North Star, Central, and Union Station, get as far as we can in the time that we have at this 12:30 meeting time. We will then reconvene in room 5 at 4:30, and we have that room until 6 o'clock. At 4:30, we'll be hearing Representative Roosevelt from the Association of Minnesota Counties. We'll be hearing Representative Hansen's bill about the transit corridor in Dakota County, and then resuming any remaining testimony or information on the information that we, or the subject we start this morning. I think what we're going to do is we're going to start with the state auditor. Since we've discussed this project last year, there has been an auditor's report that came out earlier this year. She's going to present some information on that, and then Representative Tinglestead will present her bill, and we'll hear testimony from those that are working with the North Star Project. Welcome to the committee. And if you'll state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm Pat Anderson. I'm the state auditor.
Welcome, if you'd like to continue.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. In February of this year, my office completed a review of the North Star Corridor project, and if I may, I'd like to, I have about 5 minutes of comments. I can go over that quickly and then stamp the question.
Certainly. And members, the copy of the report is included in your packet for your review. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, specifically, we reviewed the contracting practices of the North Star Corridor Development Authority and also the Anoka County Regional Railroad Authority. In addition, as you may know, we also reviewed the use of selected Anoka County procurement cards for expenses that were related to the North Star project. Now, NDCA, which is the North Star Corridor Development Authority, is a joint powers board that's made up of counties, regional railroad authorities, cities, and townships all along the North Star Corridor. And part of their focus is the implementation of the North Star Commuter Rail Project. Since 2000, NDCA has received almost $15 million in dues from its members, and Anoka County is responsible for managing their funds and contracts for services. Now, again, we limited our review to lobbying, legal, and communication services that were related to the project that were incurred from January of 2000 to May 2005. Over that time, the NDCA and the Regional Rail Authority spent about $4.3 million on these services, and a portion of those funds are reimbursed by MnDOT. Although the NDCA and the Regional Rail Authority have similar interests in regards to the North Star project, we found that they each had separate retainer agreements with three separate contractors for similar services. Now, in many instances, these three contracts invoiced the NDCA and the Regional Railroad Authority for the same services, and we're unaware of any agreement between the NDCA and the Regional Rail Authority indicating that they were splitting the costs for these contractors. Nor did we find that the two entities always received separate discernible work products under the contracts. But based on our review, it appears that the NDCA and the Regional Railroad Authority worked very closely on the North Star project. We recommended that they try to cooperate to avoid having both entities paying the same contractors to perform the same services. We also reviewed contracts that were only with the NDCA or the Regional Railroad Authority. I can tell you these contracts were generally sound and they had adequate monitoring procedures. We did find a few instances where the definition of duties for the contractors was vague, as well as situations where the parties didn't sign the contracts. My audit recommended that the entities really clean up these problems by clearly defining the duties of their contractors and ensure that the parties sign all the contracts. The next issue that we reviewed was one of procurement cards. In our review, we found that the NDCA and the Regional Railroad Authority were spending funds on meal expenses for their employees. We found that the executive director of the North Star Project had over $8,000 of charges for meal meetings between January 1, 2000 and May of 2005. We counted about 222 meals that were charged on the executive director's card over the review period. Most of these took place in the Twin Cities area. Now, this averaged out to roughly one meal for every working day over that time period. And this percentage would be greater if vacation and sick days were taken into account. The supporting documentation for these meal reimbursements included very vague descriptions of the purpose of the meeting, and we were unable to tell who attended the meetings. In addition, only the summary receipts were submitted, making it impossible to tell what the charges were for. We recommend that all reimbursement requests for meals clearly state the specific purpose or the topic of the meetings and the attendees. We also recommended that detailed receipts be obtained. Now, Anoka County, who is the fiscal agent, has policies in place that would address our concerns. So if their policies were followed by the Joint Powers Board, these problems would have been avoided. Those are the very quick and dirty recommendations, and I will stand for questions or other comments.
Thank you. To this date, have they provided additional documentation to your office as far as names of with these lunches that go with the initials, or is that something that you requested?
I don't think it's possible at this point. They didn't keep track of it over the 5 years, and I don't know how they could recreate that at this point.
And were you then able to ascertain what percentage of these meals were for people that were already under contract as lobbyists or for commissioners or
no.
People that were doing this as part of their job, if you will?
No, we're unable to ascertain who, what was bought, et cetera. We just know that the number of meals and the grand total dollars.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Auditor Anderson, you mentioned just at the conclusion of your testimony that if there were some procedures followed by Anoka County that some of these issues could have been avoided. What are some of those protocols that Anoka County has?
Auditor Anderson.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein, Anoka County has a meal policy, just as all government entities do. I believe you have a copy of it.
And Chair,
state your name for the record.
Carl Ohio, Deputy State Auditor. Anoka County does have a policy in place, and in response to our report, they said that they would do better training, that it is supposed to be accurately listed why the meeting is held, who is attending, and if it's a luncheon meeting, why it could not be held at another time, and that they would make sure it applies to everyone, and it was more re-educating.
Anderson.
Generally, government entities are not supposed to provide meals to employees or contractors or anyone unless it is unavoidable. And unavoidable would mean it has to be held over a lunch or it has to be. But and they're well aware of that. That's part of their policy. That was not followed at all, though, by the Stern College Board.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Leader, did you have a question earlier when we got started that I missed?
I was not relating to this, Madam Chair. I just was wondering if you'd explain. I'm not aware how he wanted us to fill it out by percentages or what the number was.
And we'll get our homework assignment later. So, okay. Great. Are there any additional questions of the state auditor? All right.
Thank you. I think that the number that may interest this committee is just the pure dollar amount that was spent over this time period on lobbying, legal, and communication expenses. It was about $4 million over 5 years, and that money could have, in my opinion, as a fiscal watchdog over taxpayer dollars, that money could have been much better spent building, having something tangible, shall we say, rather than spending it on brochures and going out to essentially lobby citizens and lobby legislators. So that's the issue that I have as state auditor with this project.
And there's some of us that would agree with that statement as well, Representative Hausman.
I think we as legislators have to bear some of the responsibility for this, however, because we've made life very difficult for that community. They have had to work probably 10 times as hard as they should have for bringing what ultimately is the only kind of project that can continue to build a sustainable metropolitan area, and we have given them one big uphill battle. Most other cities around the country have not had to do something similar. They have a different structure in place that doesn't require legislative approval. So in fairness to the community, the legislature has certainly presented a lot of the obstacles that required a lot of these years of work.
Representative Hall is going to make a valid point, but I think as well we've watched similar efforts by a number of lobbying firms, and some may support the idea that maybe one contract with one firm would have been more efficient than the multiple contracts with multiple firms at the same period of time. Are there any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. I understand you have to leave, but that Carla's going to stay in case there's additional questions, and we appreciate that. Thank you. All right, Representative Tingelstad. And Representative Hornstein, would you like to move House File 3342 for consideration by the committee?
Madam Chair, I move House File 3342. Recommend funding.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about the North Star Commuter Rail, which is in the governor's recommendations at $60 million. And actually, if I could just take a minute and back up and just have a quick response related to Auditor Anderson's earlier message with the lobbying, legal, and communications efforts. Many of those things occurred because of federal requirements through the Federal Transit Administration and what's necessary to look at a project and have it sort of jump through all the hoops necessary to match those to qualify for those federal dollars that are available. So I just wanted to make that quick comment. But today's bill that you're looking at, and I understand you're not officially moving the bill because it is in the governor's recs and you're just doing an overview today, so I appreciate that. It's $60 million in the state bond proceeds for the North Star Commuter Rail Line, and this would complete the state's obligation, the state's percentage of the total package of the North Star project. And I appreciate the committee last year and the legislature and the governor with the approval of the $37.5 million last year, which got us through the next stages of this project. And I will not be back here next year for asking for any additional money, so you can get that on record. Today I have with me several people that would like to go through some things on North Star Commuter Rail. Also, we have a couple people in the audience who will be available for technical questions relating to some of the legal issues or other issues that you may have as a committee. So I'd like to start with Bob McFarland and for the committee, ma'am.
Sure. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Representative Tingelstad at this time? Mm-hmm. All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. McFarland.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Bob McFarland. I'm assistant to the commissioner at MnDOT. I'm here simply to express to the committee that the legislation and the bonding request that Representative Tingelstad is talking about, the $60 million for North Star, is strongly supported by the agency and by Governor Plenty. He has proposed this bonding in his bonding recs. This amount is the continuation, as Representative Tingelstad said, of the support expressed for the project by the legislature in the 2005 bonding bill, the $37.5 million. Since the legislature expressed its support for North Star in that bill, it has helped the project along a great deal. We have received a higher ranking from the Federal Transit Administration in their early February New Starts report to Congress. We have it really spurred very productive working relationship with FTA staff in both Chicago and in Washington once the state of Minnesota was clearly on board with this project. And just recently, in a letter that I believe is in your packet and that you received from the agency, the Federal Transit Administration has indicated that it plans to recommend this project for into the next stage of the development, that is the final design stage of development, which is a very significant and critical step for the project, and it was the step, your $37.5 million in initial bonding was intended to achieve. I want to make the point that the bonding that is being requested here is very critical for the continued development of this project. The entire amount, the $60 million, is necessary, absolutely necessary, per federal rules and guidelines for New Starts projects, to be passed and approved by the state this year for the project to meet its scheduling goals of getting a full funding grant agreement later on this year. It has to be 60. Those are by the federal rules. The state has to put its share up first to show commitment to the project. And in order for us to get the full funding grant agreement this year, which is the schedule and the plan for this project, it would need to be passed by this legislative session. So again, Madam Chair, thank you to Representative Tingelstedt for carrying and bringing forth the governor's proposal. And I'd like to turn it over now to Mark Furman, who is the North Star Project Director, to take you through the development and the progress on the project in greater detail.
Well, thank you. And do you want us to hold our questions to the end, or?
It'd probably be best now.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Furman. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Mark Furman, North Star Project Director. I'd like to spend a couple minutes bringing the committee back up to speed on the progress the project has made since last session and key milestones that we have before us to accomplish here in 2006. I believe everyone knows about the project, 40-mile commuter rail project from Big Lake to downtown Minneapolis, six stations. We expect that we will be serving 5,600 passenger trips per weekday by 2020. Key 2005 milestones that we have accomplished since last session: we have completed our preliminary engineering up to the 60% level of detail, considered advanced engineering as far as we can go prior to final design. We did some validation of that engineering. We also have done value engineering like any big project like this should do. We brought in peers of ours from Seattle, Dallas, Toronto to give us their critical assessment of the project plans. And, of course, as Mr. McFarland stated, a key milestone last year was legislative enactment of the bonding bill with the North Star $37.5 million. Just last month, the FTA issued its annual New Starts report that they give for all projects in their project development pipeline. And we made tremendous progress in this last year, to the point where FTA has granted the project medium finance rating. The project has the financial capacity to construct and to ultimately operate commuter rail once the project is constructed. Project justification, mobility, transit-oriented land uses, cost-effectiveness is also a medium rating, and then overall a very solid medium rating for North Star. The report also stated that the project needs to be positioned to enter final design no later than September 30 of this year. This year's key milestones, we will be requesting, already have requested, and we will be granted permission to enter final design per the FTA letter a few weeks ago. We're before you now for the $60 million second and final installment of state funding. We will complete final design by the end of this year, and then we will go back to Federal Transit and make application for the full funding grant to secure the federal funding for the overall construction. Our bonding request has $60 million in it, which will account for some added contingency monies. We included $14 million of additional contingency in the project budget, really at FTA's encouragement last fall. And we also have adjusted our inflation rate upward slightly, which attributes $10 million of additional cost in the overall project budget. That means the project budget now stands at $289 million. Obviously, the $60 million combined with last year's $37.5 million will provide all the state funds necessary to finish our design, construct, purchase rolling stock to operate North Star. The final requirements that FTA has communicated are necessary to enter into the full funding grant are to provide accessible boarding per ADA guidelines on the commuter rail stations, to finalize and execute the agreements with Burlington Northern Santa Fe, and to maintain the medium rating that was granted to us last month. Madam Chair, I'd like to now pass it on to Commissioner Earhart. He is from Anoka County and would like to give the local perspective on our projects.
Certainly, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Earhart, if you'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dan Earhart, and I'm chair of the Anoka County Rail Authority as well as vice chair of the North Star Development Authority. I just want to say that we could have come in here with a whole lot of people and a whole lot of shirts and things like that. In the interest of time, and I know how important that is to you at this time, we know that the bonding bill, of course, is one of the most important part of business of the legislature. We'll try to save you time, and I'll be very, very short. I want to first, as I said earlier, I want to thank the committee and the members of the legislature for the $37.5 million you approved last year in the bonding bill. This year, again, of course, we're respectfully asking for the remaining $60 million that we need from the state to get the project up and running by 2009. I thought you might be interested a little bit about our constituents and the people we work with and people throughout the state and their interest in the North Star Development Authority and, of course, the North Star train. It's been very interesting for us in doing some polling that the support that we have out there for the additional $60 million for this funding for North Star is greater than 2-1, and it crosses every major demographic, geographic, and ideological group. Republicans, Democrats, male, female, liberal, conservative, younger, and older, the majority of the people support the project. Statewide, the project has 66% support. In the North Star Corridor, 74% of the people support the project. Minnesotans have looked at the project, and some of the things that are of great interest to them is the predictability of the commute and the business benefits that the North Star provides. They're interested in the predictable 35-minute commute during rush hour between Elk River and Minneapolis, which is contrary to automobiles at that time, which can take up to 70 minutes. The people in Minnesota feel that North Star Commuter Rail and transportation in general are very important to Minnesota's economy. About 81% of the people in Minnesota feel that good transportation system is important to the economy of the state of Minnesota. People were particularly interested in the time saved and very cognizant of the high commute time that we have in this metro area compared to other metro areas in the United States, and they were quite impressed and interested in the 900,000 hours that we will save in commute time because of the North Star Commuter Rail project, and about 74% of the people expressed concern about that. And also they're interested in that the North Star will not use highway dollars, and about 74% or 72% of the people mentioned that as an important issue, that it does not take away from highway dollars. It is quite interesting, about 54% of the North Star Corridor residents self-identified. We didn't prod them, but they identified they wanted to go to the airport, the Mega Mall, and then, of course, others wanted to go some other places, but primarily those are the places that they wanted to go. It is also interesting that about 15% of the population of that area expressed a high interest in believing that they would use commuter rail. Another 12% thought that they'd have some interest in using commuter rail. If only 12% of the people in that district use commuter rail, the use would translate into 50,000 riders a day, which is about 8-9 times the number of trips that we are planning at this time. In closing, I just want to say that we feel that the North Star Commuter Rail is going to be an extremely successful project, and we feel that it'll quickly jump to the maximum ridership that we're planning for, and that is 10,000 steps a day, then not that we're planning for right now because of the formulas that we're required to operate under as 5,600. But again, we feel that it'll be 10,000 people riding that each day and in almost the time it opens up. People really want an alternative to the congestion. And I finally want to say, as a person who has been involved with this from day one, 20 years, I've been working on this, and with such great help as people from the Department of Transportation, MnDOT, and the governor's office, particularly the governor's office, who has been supportive, and the Metropolitan Council, and then in your support here. So we thank you for allowing us to come here, and we're seriously looking forward to the operation of the North Star Commuter Rail in 2009. Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Representative Singleton, do you have anything you'd like to add at this time?
Nothing further right now. Just open for questions. We have some resource people in the audience.
All right, thank you. Any questions? I have a few if nobody wants to jump in. I had a conversation last week with a number of people at the FTA and trying to get a better handle on the elements of the March 8th meeting and the hurdles yet to be jumped, and a little bit more information about this cost-effectiveness rating. And so I'd like to start with some questions on that. First of all, Mr. McFarland, you said that currently they have that there's a higher recommendation now on this last report than before. What was the rating then, and what is it now?
In, Madam Chair, members of the committee, in the 2005 New Starts report to Congress by the FTA, the North Star project was given a rating at that time termed not recommended. And you may recall this debate during the session last year. The state received a letter from the Federal Transit Administration explaining that rating and said that that rating existed because the state had not yet put up any money for the project, and that but for that step, the project would be in good shape. The state put up the $37.5 million when the New Starts report in 2006 was issued to Congress. The project carried a higher rating, what is now termed medium, which some of the terminology changed in the passage of the Safe T-Lew bill. But the medium rating that this project now carries in that New Starts report to Congress is akin to a recommended rating back in 2005. So the project took a step forward in its ranking by the FTA in that New Starts report following the 2005 session.
But I think it's important to make the point that it was not a factor of being more efficient or getting a lower effectiveness rating, but rather being not recommended because you didn't complete a full application and didn't have your money. These words mean different things to different people, and I'm not sure that my understanding of it, that you're... I think the last time we talked about the money number, when you were before the committee, this project was at $24.90, and in talking with the FTA, they said the current number is $26.17. Is that correct?
I'll turn it over to Mr. Furman.
Okay. Mr. Furman, when I spoke with the people from the FTA, they stated that the current number associated with this project is $26.17. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct, and that is reflective of the adjustment in the overall project budget that we made last fall from $265 million last year to the $289 million, and that's the $24 million that I spoke to briefly, $14 million of additional contingency and $10 million of cost escalators.
Okay, and is it true that in order to have a medium rating on the finance end of this, that you have to get to the factor of $22?
Madam Chair, you're asking about the cost effectiveness index,
right.
And the way that FTA goes through their review is there's actually three components to their financial review: capital cost, operating cost, and then basically final ability to have a stable and reliable source to operate in the long term. the CEI factor is another one of those sub-ratings, and what FTA is looking for is $22 or less cost-effectiveness rating for a medium on that sub-criterion, not for the overall project, but on that sub-criterion, $22.
Okay, and so then, so in the letter where it talks about in order to receive additional funding from the feds that they have to maintain a medium rating, that is an overall rating of medium, and that various components of this could be at low or medium low, but the compilation of all of it has to maintain a medium rating, is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, and then is it also true that if you hit 27, then you go to a low rating on this cost-effectiveness index?
Madam Chair, the upper end of the range is $28 for the cost-effectiveness index. That would, greater than $28 would mean a low rating for the CEI. I should also mention in a meeting that FTA sponsored a couple weeks ago, they will be revising upward those ranges for cost effectiveness on April 30th in another month or so.
And so when the FTA gave me a figure of $27 to be rated at a low, what is there any... Am I mixing apples and oranges here, or were they incorrect? Or,
Madam Chair, if I can just maybe back up a second to be most clear, to have a cost-effectiveness rating less than $22 would mean medium for cost-effectiveness. A CEI of 22 to 27.99 today would be a medium low, and a CEI greater than $28 would be a low rating for the cost effectiveness. And again, that will be adjusted, both the low and high of that range, in another 5 weeks.
Okay, and then when I talked with them, they also used a date of September 30th. What is your understanding of what needs to be accomplished prior to September 30th in order for this project to be considered for federal funding next year?
Madam Chair and members, the FTA has made it clear to us that they want to do a couple things prior to official permission to enter final design. They want the project to finalize our plan to provide accessible boarding at all of our stations. They want to know that we have concluded our BNSF negotiations and have agreement on the business transaction. And then thirdly, both of those lead to finalizing the overall project budget, which is locked in at the time of entry into final design.
Okay, and then so for clarification purposes, then the March 8th letter then is not the official approval to enter into final design, but rather a tentative approval to enter into final design. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And then based on the criteria in the letter?
Yes.
Okay, and then can somebody tell me if there's been any discussion, if you aren't able to reach these thresholds for cost, if there are any other pots of money? We saw a move by this administration to take money out of the Met Council and slide it over to this project without legislative approval. We have legislation in place that prohibits additional use of state funds without legislative approval for these rail projects. Has there been any discussion amongst any of the stakeholders on a contingency plan for additional money for this project?
Madam Chair, from my perspective and working through the agency, no, there has not. We know... The process that has, you know, this is a federal project. This is essentially a federal project that is being governed by federal rules and processes. We're going to follow those processes, you have to, there are certain things you have to achieve in order to get into final design and complete final design. The project will have to be in a certain state after final design and a certain cost date to be considered and approved for a full funding grant agreement, which is the commitment by the federal government to participate in the full cost of the project. We intend to follow that process, and that's the process that will yield us a project. If this project cannot compete for a full funding grant agreement, cannot get federal approval, there are no other pots of money to cover that federal share.
All right. And are there any other pots of state money that you would have discussed tapping to provide for additional costs? Or one of the scenarios that was presented to me is that you would somehow find additional funding for the Hiawatha extension, try and move the structure of the process around to have less capital costs associated with North Star and fund the Hiawatha extension out of another pot of money or process.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's a lot of brainstorming that goes on with one of these projects to talk about a lot of different things that are possible but not necessarily probable, and nothing like you have discussed with Hiawatha or mentioned with Hiawatha or other entities, other circumstances are being proposed at this time.
Well, I know they're not being proposed, but have they been discussed?
We've discussed a number of scenarios with the FTA, with Burlington Northern, with a number of stakeholders, similar to what was discussed back in 2004 when this project was shifted from a Rice to Minneapolis line to a Big Lake to Minneapolis line. There are any time you're managing a project like this through a federal process that is so detailed and so strident and strict as the federal process on New Starts, you may at any point in time talk about different types of options or scenarios or thoughts you might have to make the project more competitive for the federal funding. But that's part of the process, and that nothing of that ilk at this point is being proposed. We're taking this project through the federal process.
And then if I might, one more question. It's my understanding none of the bonds have been let that have been authorized for this project, so if it does not go through, the state won't be out any money on this project, but rather all these costs incurred thus far will be covered by the locals. Is that correct?
I'll refer to Mr. Furman on that.
Madam Chair, yes, that's my understanding. It's been money that has been authorized and advanced by the NCDA from the local side, as well as some prior federal monies that had been made available to move the project into preliminary engineering.
And a couple million from Met Council, I believe. All right. Are there any additional questions? I love some of your heart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it correct to refer to the federal funds that the TAB board has jurisdiction over as state money?
Madam Chair, being somewhat familiar with the TAB process, could I just ask for a clarification? Which of the TAB monies Representative Earhart is asking about?
Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, I'm asking, for instance, about the $50 million that was lent to MnDOT to complete the or continue funding the cost down project and others.
Representative Earhart, those are really federal dollars.
Well, I thought I heard someone mention that they were state monies that we were sliding around, and I think they are federal dollars.
They're federal dollars.
Thank you.
Representative Earhart, if you're referring to my comment about the Met Council money, this is related to, I believe, $2 million that was taken out of an excess of the transit taxing district surplus that was used for the North Star project under the direction of the administration without legislative approval. Any other questions for these testifiers? All right. Thank you so much. The next person on the agenda is Mr. Sweeney from BNSF. And members, we recognize the fact that the North Star folks and the railroad are in the middle of negotiations. I think they've been going on for 3 or 4 years, but in my request to Mr. Sweeney to come today to give us an update from the railroad's perspective. I did assure him that we weren't here to learn the inner workings of the negotiations, but rather to get an update on some of the elements that are of concern to the railroad, and asked him to update us on what the new ADA requirements meant, and what portion of the track are now going to be dual track, and some of those elements that have changed since the last time we heard this issue. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sweeney. Just state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. I'm Brian Sweeney, Legislative Counsel for the BNSF Railway Company. Happy to be here to answer questions. The three areas that you cited were the ADA requirements and how that might affect the project, the increase, the reports you've received of increased conflict or congestion involving commuter and freight traffic, specifically in Southern California, and there was one other area.
The amount of the track, but amount of dual track.
The double track. The double track, that portion, typically any commuter project, you have to have double track for the entire system. You have to have two tracks that can each operate in both directions. With the signal system that allows for that, and crossovers between the two tracks every few miles. On this corridor, it would require installing about 6 miles, I believe, of additional double tracking. There's a single track in place, primarily the stretch coming down from our yard, Northtown Yard, down into downtown Minneapolis. That portion of it would have to have the second track installed. But you have to have that as a minimum for a commuter service, otherwise you run into severe congestion problems. And that's one of the things, getting into the portion about the congestion and conflict questions, that's what we have maintained from the very beginning, is that you have to have a system that's designed to accommodate that without having a degradation of freight traffic. Now, in Southern California, from what I understand, they are now already increasing the capacity. The state of California is paying for it because the additional congestion is being caused by the addition of intercity freights by Caltrans. And so to accommodate those, which really eat up more capacity than a freight train because of the higher speed at which they operate than a freight does. And so, yes, because of the growth in intercity trains between Los Angeles and San Diego, they have to add capacity for that. Finally, the ADA requirements. We have been working with the state and NCDA on that. We attended a meeting with the Department of Transportation in February, I believe, in which we jointly told them that if, depending on how these requirements are applied, it can cause a problem because the stations would have to be redesigned. The platform requirements that would fall under that they're talking about at FTA would interfere with a lot of freight equipment for high wide loads, for example. Certain cars that are lower clearance, they would not be able to clear the station platforms, and so there'd have to be a redesign or a siding added or something like that. That's something, while the letter says that they have to meet those requirements, I'm told that this is still under active review. In fact, we received a letter from the FTA on Friday, I believe, asking us for additional input on this subject. So we view it as an active reassessment that is going on right now about exactly how these requirements are going to apply.
And as you understand the requirement at this time, do you have any dollar figure associated with the cost of upgrading these stations to be ADA compliant?
Madam Chair, no, I have no idea what that would cost. I don't know if anybody has really evaluated that and gotten very heavily into it. I really can't say for sure if the engineering study has included any of that yet.
All right, thank you. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Sweeney? All right, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next person I have on my list is David Strom from the Taxpayers League. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Strom. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Strom, president of the Taxpayers League of Minnesota. I'll try not to take too much of your time. I have just three basic points that I'd like to make about this project and our concerns about it. We've been very concerned about this project for a number of years. Our first point is the North Star Corridor is just way too expensive for what you get. By our calculations, using numbers prior to the revisions in costs. If you include capital costs and annual operating subsidies, the taxpayer subsidy is about $7,371 per rider per year, including capital costs. That translates out into about 64 cents of subsidy per passenger mile. A comparison to roads would be, if you include all the relevant things, including pollution, congestion costs, everything else, it works out to about 7 cents a mile. So you're talking about something that's considerably more expensive than the alternatives. Secondly, according to North Star's own environmental impact statement, it will do essentially nothing to relieve congestion. According to their own environmental impact statement, Highway 10, before North Star gets built, would have a maximum travel speed of 28 miles an hour. After North Star is built, it will have a maximum travel speed of 28 miles an hour at peak times. Same on Interstate 94, 38 miles an hour without North Star, 38 miles an hour with North Star. According to MnDOT's own transportation plans, they say that whether or not you build North Star, you will need to expand out Highway 10 and all the highways around there because congestion will be far too great. And our third concern is that there's been a lot of talk about how the FTA has been cheerleading this project along. That's not how we have read the correspondence from the FTA. Last year, as you know, the project was not recommended. This year, as you know, the project has gotten a rather shabby medium low in terms of cost effectiveness, and we think that there has just been way too much positive propaganda being put forth. We think there are far better things to do with the taxpayers' money than invested in this project. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any questions for Mr. Strom? That was under your hurt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Strom, how do you feel about the Hiawatha Corridor?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, we opposed it then and we oppose it now. We think that it has been a tremendous boondoggle.
Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Chair Holberg, Mr. Strom. I guess my question is much more global and not about the North Star Corridor, but if it's not rail, and it's not, and the answer for some folks is not an increase in gas tax or other taxes, how do we deal with our incredible congestion problem? And if we don't have an answer with resources, and that's both a combination of using rail and highway expansion and other methods, what is the answer? Because I'm curious to find out what solutions are offered when, in fact, we're sort of in this box where we can't have higher taxes, and that's how some folks feel as it relates to the gas tax. As you know from last year's discussion, many of us felt very strongly about using the gas tax along with a myriad of other revenue enhancements for growing our transportation system, because the realities of our population growth are here, and we see the projections, but they're real. And how are we gonna deal with it if we're not able to expand our revenue base and we're not able to do things that big cities do, and that's use rail effectively?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Larson. Let me answer that question, taking it apart piece by piece. First of all, I think that the principle that ought to be used in terms of spending the resources that we do have clearly ought to be putting that money into the most cost-effective resource possible. And so if you look at something that gives you 64 cents per passenger mile subsidy versus 7 cents per passenger mile subsidy, clearly there ought to be a preference for the cheaper alternative. Secondly, I think it would be stretching things to say that there has been no increase in revenues going into transportation. Right now there's been Minnesota is going through its largest
transportation spending boom in decades, and it's something that the governor talks about all the time, all the money that's been put into transportation. Third, the Taxpayers League has, in fact, supported revenue enhancements. We've always supported, in fact, we've been pushing before it was cool, dedicating the motor vehicle sales tax to transportation, and our big beef with the with what's going on with the current version of that is that you're taking car taxes and you're putting them into transit. You know, we'd like to see money coming from people buying cars and actually going to build roads instead of doing things like building this project, which is going to be wildly expensive. And by the way, only provide 5,000 trips a day. Right now, every year, the number of trips expanding, according to the Metropolitan Council, on roads is about 100,000 trips per year increase on the roads. And so if you're looking at something that will take out 5,000 of them, you'd need 20 of them every year to take up that slack. And so it's not one North Star, it's 20 North Stars per year to get to the point where we're just at the same level of congestion that we're at today.
Well,
Representative Larson.
Well, Chair Holberg and Mr. Strom, you know, we can't do 20 all at once, so maybe we're working our way there.
Well, per year.
But the reality is that we have to find a solution. And I can't let you off the hook on the motor vehicle sales tax, because that's not, if you will, free money. That money is going to come out of the general fund, and we're going to find a way, and we're going to have an incredible debate about how we replace those dollars in the general fund. And my sense is that there's going to be a combination of other ways that we fund things that were funded out of the general fund that currently those dollars are going for. And so I think that there is going to have to be an increase in revenue. Clearly, we see big cities using effective transit choices, and I think we are in the process of making a big step in terms of preparing ourselves for the next for the next 50 years, and it seems to me that with this project, with Hiawatha, that we're seeing a lot of success in with some very good planning. But I guess I would hope that we, as we move forward, that we that if we're not supportive of, or for the folks that aren't supportive of finding ways to use bonding, and before I get off my rant, as far as the governor talking about the largest transportation bill in history and all that, true that there's additional monies in our system, but that we still have to pay for that, and there's going to be a time in which our future revenues are dried up to some degree because we're paying for that, and so that's not without cost, and so it's we can't do that forever, and build our way out of our congestion problem, and so. There's no real question in that, Madam Chair, but there's an opinion that we have to start taking this issue, I think, more seriously than we have, or we're going to be in deep trouble in the next many years in this region, and we'll all be to blame for it, because we won't have prepared our region for the future, and it isn't just about getting around town, it's about having a region that's economically viable. And
Madam Chair,
so thank you.
Thank you. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Larson, let me just quote a number that's put out there all the time. Over the next 30 years, 1 million new people are going to move into the Twin Cities metropolitan area. Every person on average takes about 7 to 12 trips a day, so you're talking about an increase, let's say conservatively, about 7 million new trips a day. When you're looking at say you build 7 commuter rail systems, each of them carries 10,000, 20,000 a day, let's call it 20,000 a day, that's 140,000 trips. If you're being very generous, 140,000 trips a day, we've got what we're looking at here as about a 7 to 12 million trip problem. And, just as a basic factor of mathematics, I think you have to look at solutions that are going to be a lot more effective than ones that deal with 5,000 at a time, or 10,000 or 20,000 at a time. And so it seems to me that a tremendous amount of time, energy, and effort is spent debating things simply because the feds are willing to give us some money over this that really will have no impact. I mean, we go back to the environmental impact statement from the North Star Corridor itself. It says it will have no impact on, it will have a benefit to the few people who are on that train, but on the overall transportation system, you're going to have the same amount of congestion, you're going to have the same problem, and you're going to have to spend the same money on roads. And so if this is being looked at as a substitute for roads, that's certainly not what MnDOT says in its own plan. What this is talking about having a nice benefit for the few thousand people who will ride it. And then the question is, why should the taxpayers pay for that?
Just a brief reaction to that, Madam Chair and Mr. Strom. You know, some of the research that I've seen in terms of our population growth that is expected over the next, whether it's 20, 25, 30 years of the million people, does show probably additional concentration of that population growth within, at least to some degree, within the urban center. And so it's my understanding that we need to be on the cutting edge of making sure that that we have a first-class transportation system, and you're not looking at someone who I think, and you know from my history in the legislature, I'm not someone who's been afraid to vote for more dollars to pour concrete. I believe that it has to be a system and a solution that is has many facets to it. But it seems to me, as a part of that, we also need to look at a first-class transit solution. And so, Madam Chair, Mr. Strom and I won't ultimately agree today, but I appreciate and we'll spare the committee of trying to take much longer trying to. But I just think it's important for us to have that conversation because, I recognize there's a problem. I was willing to step nearly off the edge and vote for a $7 billion transportation package that would have, by all estimations, not allowed congestion to increase. I mean, that's sort of in some ways, the depressing part for me is to see the massive bill, whether you agreed with the pieces of it or not, the massive amount of funding that's necessary for us to stay at the place that we're at today. And that is, I think, the overriding concern that I think all the folks on this committee face as we move forward. So,
Madam Chair, and I don't want to take up too much of the committee's time, but last time I checked, Big Lake is not in the urban core. And, many of the projects that are now being looked at are, in fact, we've got sort of two things going on. One, on the one hand, talking about light rail, which is in the urban core, but commuter rail is, in fact, talking about going out and, in fact, increasing urban sprawl. If what you're looking for is a land use policy that concentrates people in the urban core, that certainly seems like a very poor one to do that. You'd probably be talking about a dramatic increase in what is already one of the most rapidly growing areas, and more car trip.
Well, Madam Chair,
Mr. Larson will give you, the last word, and I think we need to move on.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Except that, Mr. Strom, the reality is that not all the job market exists within the city and within the urban core. And, in fact, many opportunities for employment do exist, whether they're in Bloomington, whether they're up the 94 corridor, whether they'll be down the Red Rock corridor. So to the ability to allow people and options to move, especially to employment and education and other things, I think needs to be a part of the mix.
Thank you, Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I next have Mr. Hamilton. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hamilton. If you'll please state your name for the record.
My name is Harold Hamilton. I'm the president and CEO of Microcontrol Company, a manufacturing company in Fridley. And I'm also the founder and supporter of the Anoka County Watchdog.com. That has about a dozen study papers about North Star. I'll try not to repeat anything that David Strom has said, so maybe just a few things. I think my big concern about this project really is then process. I was asked several years ago to testify in favor of the project at one of the either Senate or House committees and by the county. And, of course, my first question is, what is it? How much does it cost? And how does it compare with other solutions such as upgrading Highway 10? Well, they could tell me what it was and how much it was going to cost, but they didn't have any cost comparisons with, for example, upgrading Highway 10. But they told me for sure they would get me those numbers. Well, after waiting about 3 years, and frankly, they sent people down to our plant repeatedly with thicker and thicker stacks of paper, supposedly with the answers, but they never did have any cost comparisons. And so in total frustration, finally last summer, at a local Chamber of Commerce meeting, I put in a resolution requesting the county provide us with that kind of information, since they hadn't to date. And to my total shock, one of the people from the county stood up and admitted that they not only didn't have the cost comparisons, but they didn't think it was possible to generate it. And so, from my standpoint, why they would, over that period of time, keep telling us that they had it, and finally we find out that they really didn't. And, of course, we certainly know what their motivation was. It was to get that percentage of people that supported the project up over 50%. And maybe just a word or two about that. As I'm sure you know, the state had an audit and determined that the county had spent $4.3 million in promoting the project. And in the last 30 months, they've spent $850,000 approximately in money to for lunches and dinners and entertainment for trying to, again, provide promotion for the project. So if we had that kind of money to oppose the project, I'm sure that it would have made a difference. Now, it isn't that I necessarily opposed it from the beginning. I just would like to know, is it, since I'm an engineer by training and a business person, everything that I spend money on for the company that I run has to be very carefully looked at. I certainly would expect the county and the state to do the same. So another relevant question that came up was, well, what is the purpose? You see, I mistakenly assumed that it was to relieve congestion during rush hours. And I found out from a couple of legislators that no, the purpose is to get people from Big Lake down to Minneapolis and from Minneapolis to Big Lake. Well, I really can't buy that. I don't believe that. It's really true. To give them the benefit, I assume that's people along the route to Minneapolis. And certainly, if you look at Highway 10, the people that are coming down that highway, say to Coon Rapids, I'm sure they're going to a whole variety of places besides Minneapolis, going to Brooklyn Park, going to Blaine, going to my plant in Fridley, going to St. Paul. So they're just a wide variety of places those people go. So really, it's not quite as simple as just getting people from point A to point B. Cost effectiveness, I think David Strom covered the points that I had to make. I would just say that that roughly with the amount of resources that the county and the state are going to put into the project, one could upgrade Highway 10 out to Sunfish Boulevard for roughly that kind of money. And the question is, how would it compare from a cost-effective standpoint in reducing rush hour traffic? That's the question. And from my standpoint, I think it would do a lot more than a rail system from Big Lake to Minneapolis. Other alternatives, I thought that one question was certainly very relevant. High-speed buses are certainly an alternative. And there was recently an estimate that it would cost about $37 million for a high-speed bus from Lakeville to Minneapolis, and I see the plans for going from Minneapolis to St. Paul for a high-speed rail, but I don't see anything about high-speed buses. So what's wrong with high-speed buses? Well, I'm told that apparently high-speed buses really aren't in vogue right now, or perhaps never have been. But I would think that high-speed buses make a lot of sense. Now, again, in going to my local Chamber of Commerce meetings, last month the manager of public relations, in discussing some of the issues of the day, mentioned to us that there were 6 buses go from Elk River to Minneapolis, and that they were grossly overloaded, in fact, overloaded to the point that people were left without a ride. And so my question was, well, why don't you add another bus or two? And his response is, we don't have any money. So here we are. We are spending, according to the radio, we're spending millions and millions of dollars on the North Star project, but we don't have any money to lease a couple more buses. This, to me, absolutely makes no sense. So other than that, I'm also a little concerned about the fact that after all these years of negotiation, we don't have an agreement with Burlington Northern. How long does it take? I would think that that's one of the first things we want to do is get an agreement with them. So in summary, I think analysis is a must. If we can't do analysis on these kinds of projects before we go ahead with them, and let's face it, we're talking about some real money here, millions and millions. We need to do the kind of analysis that makes sense. And certainly misleading people, as I think the county and some of the local politicians have done, is a real detriment. And if we, if they can't tell us the truth, how are we as a society going to make intelligent decisions about what we should do? Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Hamilton? Seeing none, thank you very much, sir, for taking the time to come down today. Representative Hinkelstedt, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak to this issue? All right, seeing none, Representative Hinkelstedt, did you want to close with any comments, or are there any questions by committee members? Representative Hinkelstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today, and certainly with a project this size, there's always going to be differing points of view. But one thing I want to really make point of today is that the North Star Commuter Rail Project is one of the most highly scrutinized projects we've ever had here at the legislature. And I know others have told me that if we scrutinized every single project in the bonding bill as much as this one has been, there would never be bonding bills, or the bonding bills would be very small. And so, you know, I've listened to the testimony today, and much of it is a repeat from what we've heard in the past. And you know, everyone has an opportunity to get their opinion on the table. And quite frankly, if there were not people with a differing point of view, I would be surprised, because this is a lot of money that the state is looking at. However, it is very cost effective. That was one of my premises when I decided to be chief author of this bill. Compared to busways in this corridor, and you need to look at this particular corridor that already has this existing train track right along Highway 10, this is the most cost effective option. And it will offer some changes, some opportunities for people to get back and forth to work. And I guess with that, I just, you know, appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I just have one quick question at the end, Madam Chair. I'm hoping you pass this bill because today's my birthday. It would be a great present. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy birthday, Representative Hinkelstedt. Any questions? All right. Thank you. And members, I'm going to lay the bill on the table, and that we're not going to forward a particular bill to the Capital Investment Committee, but rather committee recommendations, which will be part of your homework.
Madam Chair?
Representative Abrams?
You know, I'm probably going to support it, but I have a real concern after going through the auditor's report, the rather brusque nature in which the Anoka County people and NCDA or whatever was audited basically deal with the auditor's recommendations.
What's the auditor?
you know, one of the concerns I think that I have is their ability to manage the project. And when I kind of see kind of basically putting off some pretty important issues raised by the auditor in, you know, one-liners, I thought that the auditor made some pretty good points that ought to have been the opportunity for a little bit of internal reflection and putting in place management structures, because of the amount of money involved in this was you know, any dollar waste is a dollar wasted, but, you know, the amount of dollars involved really wasn't much. But I am concerned about the brusque nature of the response to the auditor's report by these authorities. And, you know, they probably have the votes to get this out of the legislature, but, you know, the auditor, regardless of who wins the election, is going to be on this case. And I would really, really counsel people to try to work with these recommendations and with good practices, rather than just say, you know, how dare you raise questions about some of this stuff.
Well, and Representative Abrams, as I read the report, I was trying to imagine who would be having lunch with these groups that wasn't already a lobbyist or an elected official or associated with the project that should be paying their own lunch, and I don't know that we'll ever get an answer to that, but my understanding is that Anoka County has revised their rules and regulations and will do better in the future.
Yeah, and, you know, Madam Chair, again, the dollar amounts involved with, you know, the potential for double billing and contracts that overlap, you know, really may not have been a whole lot, but I think that the response ought to have been that we're going to be putting systems in place to prevent this from occurring, rather than kind of the defensive nature that was undertaken. You know, I would note that the legislative auditor issued a pretty damning report on the Department of Revenue's collections practices and some of the compliance work. Actually, the Department of Revenue was entirely different, which is, you know, thank you for taking a look at some of this stuff, and we're going to incorporate these changes, and then we're going to do better. You know, I'm just, you know, flagging it that, you know, folks, you got a little bit of work to do here. I don't take my comments as saying that I think that millions of dollars have been absconded down to Cabo or anything like that, but I think that the management practices ought to be improved.
Representative Singleton, did you want to respond?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Abrams. And yes, I have spoken with the Anoka County officials and NCD officials, and they have assured me that protocol has changed. Things have been upgraded. Various systems have been changed to go in accordance with the auditor's recommendation. So I think it will be different now, and you will see the changes as reflected by the auditor's report. So I have every confidence of that. Thank you for that comment.
Thank you. Any additional questions for the bill author? All right, thank you, Representative Tinglestead, and happy birthday. And we're not making our recommendations tomorrow, but they're supposed to do their homework tonight. So, all right, the next item on our agenda is the Central Corridor, the Governor's recommendation. I understand that Judge Shetman is going to present on behalf of the Governor, and that Representative Hausman also has a bill that has a different dollar amount requested, but for the same project. And if I might go back to agenda item number 3, Representative Larson moves approval of the minutes from Tuesday, March 16th. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's nice to be back. We are just going to get this pulled up here real quick, and I also understand that after we make the presentation regarding the Governor's request for the bonding bill, that Representative Hausman has some folks here that she'd like to bring up from the business community, from the and from the city and county, I believe. So we will try to run through this as quickly as possible. And I have Arlene McCarthy with me, who's the Director of Transportation Services. I'm sure you're all familiar with her now. And we will move forward here with the PowerPoint.
All right. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Arlene McCarthy with the Metropolitan Council. I will move through this quickly in the interest of time. I have just a few slides here to give you a little bit of the flavor of the history of this line, because there's some history and some of the decisions with infrastructure from quite a long time ago that really impact some of the alternatives and options we have available to us today. Going all the way back to 1858, which is when this picture was taken of folks that are heading up to Canada, and to do that they followed the Central Corridor. So this corridor has been in a key transportation corridor for an awfully long time. The next progress that we had in this corridor was the train engines, and this here is the William Crookes train engine. And it operated in the Central Corridor. And then the next phase was the trolleys, and that's what replaced this phase. This slide here was taken around 1905. It is looking towards Minneapolis on University Avenue. And we benefit today greatly from some of these past decisions. And if you look at this street, you will see how wide it is for a street back in that era. And one of the benefits of University Avenue that is very relevant to the alternatives that we are looking at today is its right-of-way. It is unusually wide. It is 120 feet wide, and that allows quite a bit of options without acquiring additional right-of-way, whether we're looking at an LRT alternative or a BRT alternative. Okay. The trolley cars were the next mode that were in operation, and the trolley cars had a very significant impact on University Avenue also. The trolley cars followed the same basic route that University Avenue's Route 16 local bus follows today, and it was a very heavily patronized trolley line. Now, because the trolley was there in the middle of the street, utilities have not been placed in the middle of University Avenue. And as I think many of you know, one of the key factors with transit ways and all types of construction projects is the relocation of utilities that commonly exist in the right-of-way of the street. But the benefit of trolley a long time ago, or one of the benefits, is that utilities were not put in the middle of the street. There are utilities with the cross streets, of course, crossing University. And there are issues with, like, district energy in downtown St. Paul. But in general, along University Avenue, that's a very good benefit to us today. Then we wanted just to kind of take a look back at Central from a regional perspective. There is a reason it's called the Central Corridor. It's connecting our two main downtowns, and along with the University of Minnesota, that makes up the three largest employment centers in our region. And as you can see here, it really ties together. It's that inner link of our interstate system here in the region. Today, well, there's about 250,000 jobs in this corridor. That, of course, includes both downtowns and the U of M as the key employment. And the growth for employment is very significant. Within the Central Corridor, we're looking at a growth of 22%. Over a 20-year period to 2020, 17% in St. Paul and 31% in Minneapolis. And the Central Corridor connects the five key employment and activity centers here in our region, the downtowns of each St. Paul and Minneapolis, the U of M, and the Capitol Complex here, and the Midway. And then in addition, we've mentioned the U of M, but there are many other universities and colleges that are within a 3-mile radius of this corridor, and that represents a significant college population of more than 60,000 students. Now, this corridor has continued to get busier and busier. Between 1990 and 1998, daily traffic rose more than 24% along Interstate 94, such that it is now one of the most congested corridors that we have in the Twin Cities. More than 5 hours a day, of course primarily in the peak hours, rush hours, is when we have congestion on I-94. Our projections are that vehicle miles traveled will increase by 48% in this corridor. Well, of course, it's pretty much at capacity in the peak, so this means that primarily we will see the widening of the rush hours. What's now 5 hours will grow in the number of hours of severe congestion in this corridor. Another factor is that rather than facing that congestion in the corridor, folks will go to divert to alternate streets, such as Washington and University. And if you have traveled on those streets lately, they have their own share of problems along certain segments of the route. We wanted to just show you where the highway investment priorities are in the region and point out that I-94 in our transportation policy plan, which is projected out to 2030, does not at this time plan for any improvements on the I-94 interstate. There are some reasons for that. There are some significant barriers to widening I-94. The available right-of-way is very restricted. In other words, to widen I-94, we would have to purchase new right-of-way, and that would involve businesses and things like that along either side, one or the other. And there's also some adjacent rail lines, particularly in the vicinity of Highway 280. We have active rail lines. There are two bridges, railroad bridges, that cross over Interstate 94. So in addition to the auto bridges, there are some rail bridges that would have to be lengthened and reconstructed. There would be a substantial impact to the neighborhoods. It's a combination of the right-of-way that would have to be acquired and the construction impact. And then the downtown commons, both Minneapolis and St. Paul, they are the current bottlenecks to I-94. So if you expanded 94 in what we'll say the midsection, if you did only that and did not expand the capacity of the bottlenecks, you're actually exacerbating the bottlenecks. They would become a greater factor in that. So really, widening or expanding I-94 would have a very high cost due to the right-of-way primarily and these bottleneck areas. So looking at an alternative in this corridor with transit, last year, the three routes that serve what is pretty much the central corridor, the local Route 16, the limited stop Route 50, and the express Route 94 that travels on I-94, carried just under 24,000 rides a day. And as you know, Hiawatha is carrying about 24,000 rides a day. So it really is a capacity issue in this corridor for us as we see the trip demand growing. We have updated our model working with the FTA, and using that updated model, our projections are that by 2030, 43,300 people would be using light rail on a daily basis. The local bus service would be significantly reduced because, of course, rail would be there taking the place. We would still operate Route 16 at a reduced frequency from what it operates at today, and the same would be with the 94 Express. But there will continue to be some riders on the bus service in that corridor if rail is chosen as the alternative and constructed. Just again to quickly show you the general alignment of this corridor. It's an 11-mile corridor between the two downtowns of St. Paul and Minneapolis through the state capital and the U of M, operating on University Avenue and then transitioning to Washington Avenue as we go towards the west. Again, both an LRT and a BRT alternative are being considered. LRT would have an exclusive right-of-way for the entire length. BRT would have an exclusive right-of-way on the University Avenue portion of the route. It would operate in mixed traffic in the vicinity of the U of M and on the existing Diamond Lanes through the downtown. Okay, we're going to run the simulation of Central here for you real quick. And And what this simulation shows is if you're traveling east on University Avenue from Pryor towards Snelling. Now, as you can see, light rail is in the center. There's two tracks, one for each direction. There's space for two lanes of general auto traffic. And then for most of the length, there remains space for parking along the side. And that is a very important issue, of course, to the local community. Now, when you approach a station, and here we're approaching a station at Fairview, then the additional width needed for the station prevents parking on the street right at those locations. The same is true when you're making a left-hand turn. That additional space requires enough space such that we can't have parking. Now, this is just a station concept for the simulation. I don't think the station would look exactly like this. We certainly are not that far along in design. So those are just some of the points we wanted to show. That's enough. Moving on to the timeline for the Central Corridor project. We right now are nearing the end of the draft EIS phase. We're expecting the FTA to release the draft EIS very soon, and we'll go through a process there, which I'll get to in a moment. But the key phases of our timeline here after this phase would be preliminary engineering, and we do require FTA approval to enter into preliminary engineering. The next step is final design. Likewise, we need FTA approval for that. And then for construction, we need FTA approval to go into construction, and that's where we secure a full funding grant agreement from the FTA. The status, as I mentioned, the alternatives analysis and draft EIS has been reviewed by the FTA. We've very recently received positive feedback from them and are anticipating their release in the near future. So the next steps would be releasing that draft EIS for public comment, and we would go through a public comment period to get input on the options that are proposed, both BRT and LRT. And then the decision on the locally preferred alternative would be made. And after that, we would submit our application to the FTA requesting permission to enter into preliminary engineering. Now, the preliminary engineering, that's a process where we really decide how the system will look and operate. We essentially get to what we call the 30% design level. We expect that that would take about 18 months. And the end of that phase is when we receive a record of decision from the FTA on the environmental impact statement. So there's a bit of environmental work that also goes on during this phase. It's at this point in preliminary engineering where the final decisions on the station locations is made, and that's also an important item with the community. Final design, to move into that, we have to have one half of what we call the non-federal share. You might hear that commonly called the local share, but that means the share that the state and any local entities such as the counties and cities are contributing. We anticipate that final design will take 1 to 2 years. Now, if the LRT alternative is selected, we would estimate that that would cost $50 million for final design. If BRT is the selected mode, final design would be significantly less, and probably less than half of that. And that's because there's only 6 miles of exclusive busway with a BRT versus 11 miles with LRT. Now, there's one point I do want to make, and I think this was highlighted on a slide with preliminary engineering. But as was mentioned, the final design, we're concerned, as was mentioned in the North Star presentation, after April 30th, the FTA will be issuing some updated rules and things. And our anticipation is that there are some things presently done in final design that might be moved into preliminary engineering. But we don't know, and we won't know until the FTA makes their final decision on that. So we're aware of that, and we just want to make sure you're aware of that. For construction, again, the FTA must approve our financial plan, which is both an operating plan and a capital plan, and they would appropriate their share of the capital dollars through the full funding grant agreement. The entire non-federal share does need to be committed at that time. We are very sensitive to the local community and understand that the construction needs to be phased in such a way to minimize impacts on the community. And we will work with the businesses and neighborhoods to design our construction schedule with that in mind. Now, to where we are today with our request, again, we need to select the locally preferred alternative. The estimate for light rail would be $840 million, and it's $240 million construction cost estimate for the BRT, or Bus Rapid Transit alternative. The preliminary engineering phase we estimate at about $12 million. There is $5.25 million from the 2005 bonding bill. And I'd like to point out there's a typo here in this next bullet where I've listed $6.5 million from the FTA. That is actually $7.5 million has been secured from the FTA. So if you'd make note of that, I'd appreciate it. And so that those two sources together, we anticipate would cover us for the preliminary engineering phase if what we anticipate to be PE holds true. But again, there is this likelihood that the FTA after April 30th might change what is required for preliminary engineering. And if that is the case, we would anticipate definitely using some of these 2006 bonds that we're requesting to complete the preliminary engineering phase, that they will most likely be needed for that. And again, it's not new work, it's more shifting in the phase of a project, shifting things that have previously been in final design to preliminary engineering. Again, the governor has recommended $2.5 million to complete the preliminary engineering and start the final design. And that cost does depend on the alternative selected. And just to wrap up, we presented last week on Cedar Avenue and 35W Bus Rapid Transit projects. And those two projects combined with Central Corridor are our bonding requests for this year.
Right, thank you. And I have a couple of questions, but in the meantime, Representative Hollison, if there's anybody here to testify on this that's not able to come back at 5 o'clock is when we get back to this, so if you want to let me know that in a minute.
Okay.
But if you could go back to slide number 11 where you talk about ridership numbers.
Yes.
And in your 2030 numbers,
mm-hmm.
Do you have a figure for how many passengers would be using bus if light rail were not constructed, and bus versus, I don't see much here, any comparison to current buses versus a busway. And then talk a little bit, I'm assuming that there's far less process associated with doing a busway versus LRT, and that a major portion of your remaining slides in your presentation were related to an LRT corridor. And could you speak to that a little bit?
Madam Chair and committee members, we are still finalizing the numbers on BRT ridership with the updated model. However, it would most likely be in the ballpark of about 35,000 rides a day. One of our concerns with modeling this, given our experience, we have quite a bit of experience on this corridor today with our Route 16, 50, and 94. And in order to accomplish carrying that volume of people with buses, what we would be looking at is each trip would be three articulated buses moving together. It's about 200 people per trip. And that essentially equates to three, and when I say articulated, some people call that the double bus or the longer buses that have about 64 seats. So we would be looking at buses with a standing load carrying about 80 passengers each. So so in theory, with the modeling, we could carry that many people, but we know from just carrying 24,000 people today on bus that it's very difficult to maintain a reliable schedule, and things start to break down, for lack of a better term, and it's just very difficult. And then the moving on and off the bus when you get when it gets that full, it's very hard to move around. So, but the ridership, we would estimate in the ballpark of about 35,000 with the BRT.
And then what would, then do you have numbers if you had just had what you have today? Is it even more? Do you increase your ridership with a BRT versus a current system?
I do not, Madam Chair, I do not have that number readily available. In general, we have been adding service over the last few years. It's been a wonderfully growing market for us, and we have been adding service, but again, continually trying to have a reliable service has been the struggle over the last few years.
Thank you. Representative Housen, we've got 5 minutes, so we have to conclude. Is there anybody here that
is, because I have something about their talking points, is that all of our business representatives could conclude in the next 5 minutes if we could just take their testimony, and then they wouldn't have to come back. The people testifying will show the range of support in the business community, from the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce, from the president of the Burnsville Chamber of Commerce, and then also Rick Beeson from the St. Paul Area Chamber. And I think they have relatively brief statements. And they
So for clarification, you're asking that Mr. Klingel, Mr. Beeson, Mr. Van Helden, Mr. Dow, and Mr. Morris?
Mr. Morris is our staff person, and I'm hoping he'll be able to stay for later. And yes, I'm sure that the four business representatives can all conclude.
Our friends from that council, they can come back
yeah.
for questions afterwards. Okay. If those gentlemen would step to the stand, we'd appreciate it. In the meantime, Representative Leader, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and I forget her name, but on page 19, where you have the preferred alternatives, you have $840 million for light rail and $240 million for bus. And the bus, normally you have a lifespan of buses 12 years and a recycling. How do you relate those numbers together in the long term?
Ms. McCarthy?
Chair Holberg and Representative Leader. You're right in that this is an initial capital cost, and so it would have the initial fleet needed. There would be a more frequent replacement cost with the buses, with the BRT alternative, with quite a significant volume of buses, quantity of buses.
So this is just an initial cost.
This is a capital cost for building, huh?
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Leader. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen. If you'll state your name for the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Larry Dowell. I'm the president with the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce and also lead the Central Corridor Partnership activity with our organization. The Corridor Partnership is a very, very important transportation vision for the state of Minnesota as well as the upper Midwest. In 2004, our organization, in conjunction with a variety of others, formed the Central Corridor Partnership for and by business to lend support and a voice of support on this project. This project is led by a diverse group of business leaders, large and small, along University Avenue in the Midway area, but also in the two downtowns. These businesses are committed to securing the necessary funding for development of the Central Corridor. Development of the 11-mile line along University Avenue will be crucial to the growth and prosperity for both our two downtown core areas, but also as a region as a whole. This is about business from our perspective. This is not about any other issue. It is about moving goods and services and people to and from places of employment in an effective way. The project has regional significance, and you'll hear in a moment from the Metropolitan Coalition of Chambers, but from diverse business groups like the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce representing statewide interests. This project is included in their plan for development. An important element to lead us into the next phase of engineering development has been the elusive cost effectiveness index, which we have been hoping to receive on this project for well over a year. This cost effectiveness index for the Central Corridor project has now been calculated. The CEI for the Central Corridor Light Rail Transit Line is between $24 and $25, well below the FTA threshold of $28 or less for a project to enter into preliminary engineering. Using the models that were referred to earlier by Met Council and the Governor's Office, Again, I wanted to reemphasize that the cost-effectiveness index is between $24 and $25. This is excellent news for the corridor as a whole. It demonstrates that the project has a fiscal merit. Project needs our voices of support, and it needs your support. And I thank the members of the committee, the legislature, and others for helping move this project along. A couple years ago, I believe the project was stalled. I believe that there has been momentum on the project, and there will continue to be. Up next is Mr. Klingel.
Mr. Klingel, welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record. You got three gentlemen in about a minute and a half. So.
Thank you. I am Todd Klingel, the President and CEO of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce, here also to support the Central Corridor Project. It's an important transit project that has the backing of business, neighborhood groups, and political leaders on both sides of the aisle at the local and the federal level. We recognize the development of this much-needed transit line is good for business. It's also good for my alma mater, the University of Minnesota, and it's good for the overall region. It's about moving people to more businesses, more jobs, and more educational opportunities. It's also about remaining competitive with cities around the country that we can attract the workers and new residents we will need to fuel our growth. Not accessing the federal dollars available not only decreases our competitiveness, but it actually strengthens those with whom we compete by sending the dollars to them. So I urge your support of this.
Thank you, Mr. Klingel. And who's next?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Yes, Rick Thiessen, President of the Park Midway Bank and co-chair of the Central Corridor Partnership. Appreciate being able to stop over here this afternoon. Our holding company has three banks that are on the university line, the bank right outside the state capitol, our bank on University in Vandalia, and our sister bank, Franklin, which is off the Hiawatha line in downtown Minneapolis. As a business leader, I'm very concerned about the transportation situation that we're in. It's difficult for employees to move around the region. We've had employees drop out of the job workforce. The difficulty getting goods moved around by our customers is significant. And we're very excited to be working on the Central Corridor partnership. There's over 300 businesses up and down the corridor who are in support of this project and in support of using light rail transit as preferred mode. And I'll take questions later.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. You'll state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members, good afternoon. I'm Darren Van Helden with the Burnsville Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here today as chair of the Metropolitan Coalition of Chambers. That's a group of 24 chambers from across the metropolitan area, ranging from Forest Lake in the northeast, Eden Prairie in the southwest, and a variety of others all across the map. The significant factors that we've all recognized the importance of this project to metro-wide transportation and even statewide, certainly beyond simply the metro. This obviously is not just a Minneapolis or St. Paul project. This is a project that has significance, as I said, again, metro-wide, statewide. It's important to us. I urge you all to consider this for inclusion in the 2006 bonding bill and keep it moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, gentlemen. Members, we will recess the committee. We will reconvene at 4:30 in room 5. And included in your packets, for those of you that don't have committees next, there's also a memo by Mr. Walls that kind of outlines some scenarios related to transit funding into the future, and we'll discuss that a little bit at 4:30 as well in that committee. But if you just fold up your materials, the staff will take this to the next committee room and have it there for you as well. And with that, we're in recess until 4:30. We're using 100, but for the example, let's just say NorthStar. We all know that they want $60 million, okay? But if you look at what the governor's recommendations, the total amount of dollars spent, that would be 40% of the total. His total recommendations, as you can see, is $151 million.
Okay, so if we wanted to agree with those percentages, we would write in 42?
Right. So if Representative Hornstein.
So again, no dollar amounts, just percentages.
Right. But it is some.
Madam Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have some bills down here that have authors behind it. Are the ones that are above there have no authors? Is that just all in the Dorman bonding bill? Is it Dorman's name that would go behind there as far as the author of that particular those projects or what?
The projects that are listed, the first approximately two-thirds of the page include what were the agency requests to the administration for the governor's bonding recommendations. So in other words, you will see that under Central Corridor, Met Council requested $10 million, and then the governor included $2.5 million. Okay. And then the other thing that I should probably bring to your attention is that under the Department of Transportation exterior, the request and recommendation from the governor was the $10.16 million of trunk highway bonds. There are some people on this committee that feel that those should be GO bonds. So we've provided for you two columns for that particular project, whether or not you want it to be funded by trunk highway or by GO bonds. And in your 100 points, you would not have to spend your 100 points in the trunk highway bond columns.
That'd be outside of
it. That would be outside of the 100 points. So you can put in there what you'd like to spend, but it should not be part of the GO bonding for the bonding bill recommendations. It'll be trunk highway funded. And in the case of the Department of Transportation, depending on what your priority is, whether it be trunk highway or GO bonds, you can use that accordingly.
So, Madam Chair, there's only three trunk highway bond projects that they don't go towards the, towards your, if you wanted to use money in those three, they don't go towards the 100%, is that what you're saying?
Unless you were to use the column for the DOT exterior of GO bonds.
Okay.
Are there any other questions? And again, if you could get these to Mr. Estenson by noon tomorrow, then I can have a completed worksheet to present to the bonding committee. We're last up tomorrow afternoon, so I'm guessing around 3 o'clock. All right, Representative Ruth, did you find this liberal?
We did.
Thank you, Representative Ruth. Members, we're going to hear the AMC bonding proposal that's being carried by Representative Ruth. It was an oversight. This probably should have been heard last week when we discussed these programs with MnDOT, and Representative Ruth asked for an opportunity to hear this bill today. So, Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A little bit of a clarification in the green sheet that we have, that's what we say, the Association of Rensselaer Counties has the $90 million for the local bridge and the local road improvement is $159 million. So those are in here, and going to your question, Representative Anderson, that we don't have them really listed according to author, but that was why, because somehow it got overlooked. So, Madam Chair, are we just hearing this? I guess I should have asked this for clarification before. Can we move it for inclusion, possible inclusion?
And we're not moving a bill to capital investment. We're rather just making committee recommendations. So you can move the bill to be considered by the committee, and then we'll lay it on the table.
As we do our people. Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I have Ms. Loverell with me. And, of course, you have all seen this bill many times. And it's our roads and bridges that goes into the bonding for the whole state of Minnesota. So I'll let Ms. Loverell take over.
Welcome to the committee. Ms. Loverell, if you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Carol Loverell with the Association of Counties. And I'd like to thank the chair and members for giving us this opportunity to talk about and advocate for these local bridges and these local roads. Only through these two programs since 1988 have we received any additional funding. And while we appreciate the funding received last year for our local bridges and local roads, the amount received was a far cry from the actual need. And if you look at all the handouts that I have provided, the $40 million that we received last year, within 2 weeks of the appropriation being available, the money was spent. And within a few weeks after that, the $10 million that was granted and appropriated for the roads of regional significance was also spent. And on these two sheets, if you refer to these are the actual projects that were built and completed with those funds, both for the local road improvement program and with the local bridge program. And the other sheets for 2006 and 2007, these are the projects that will be completed in the next biennium with the $90 million that we are requesting. These are actual requests through the Office of State Aid's Local Bridge Program of projects that are ready to go when the funds become available. And so we complete those, and the same as that for the local road improvement program, both the roads of regional significance and the rural road safety account. These are projects ready to go with the $112 million in requests for the roads of regional significance account and the $47 million in requested funds for the rural road safety improvement program. Local units of government are constantly being asked to do more with less. And we've not been privy to the funding increases that MnDOT has been privy to through their accelerated bonding program. We thank members for supporting funding for these programs, but we need a long way to go to catch up in our increasing needs. Our infrastructure continues to decline faster than we can maintain it. We are over $200 million short in just preserving what we have. And as you know, the county engineers have been before you with their annual needs assessment, and it continues to grow. Inflation is eating up our funds at the rate of 15 to 20%. Haulers and shippers want access to our roads that can't accommodate the heavier weight. They want us to build more 10-ton roads so that we can accommodate their heavier trucks. We don't have the revenue to do that. The facts are eating away at the available revenues, and property taxpayers are screaming about the increases in their property taxes. There are only three sources of revenue for county highway departments: the state aid funds we receive from the gas tax and the registration fees, money through the federal aid program that can only be spent on federal aid programs, and property taxes. The Highway User Trust Fund also is seeing a decline in revenues due to the drop in motor vehicle registration fees of $56 million that was presented to the county engineers at their recent board meeting, and a decline of $6 million in the MDES revenues, which is really disturbing. So our county highway appropriations are going down also. We urge you to be our advocates for these requested bonding dollars. They appear to be the only sources of revenue that we can look forward to, and we urge your support. And I'd be happy to try and answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lovell. Are there any questions for Ms. Lovell? Okay, seeing none, Mr. Vanosik. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bob Vanosik, and I'm here representing the Metropolitan Inter-County Association, organization of 13 counties, 5 in the metro area and 8 in greater Minnesota. I'm here to speak today to the need to continue investing in Minnesota's local road and bridges. I think this legislature has a pretty good track record in recent bonding sessions in your willingness over a long period of time to fund to help fund local bridge replacement and repair, and more recently your willingness, in fact the House has taken the lead in providing funds for the local road improvement program. I won't go over all the points that you've just heard from Ms. Lubro, except to let you know that I concur with them. And would just maybe add on a personal note as it relates to the recent funding for the safety account in the local road improvement program. I'm very familiar with one of the projects that was just completed in Scott County, in part with funds from that account, and that is the intersection of County Road 2 and Highway 13. In a prior life, I was on the New Prague Volunteer Fire Department for 21 years, and we were called to that intersection several times over that time period to respond to serious accidents, and in some cases, including where there was loss of life. Again, through the use of these funds, MnDOT installed a roundabout in that intersection. And I think it's working very well, and in my opinion, it probably already has saved one or more lives. And so I think these are dollars that are well spent. When you appropriate the money, the bridges get repaired, and the safety projects do happen. And there's a backlog, and while I think it might be unrealistic that you will fully fund the list of requests that has come before MnDOT, again, I'll thank you for your willingness to, at least over the course of the past three administrations, the legislature has been willing to allocate more dollars for these programs than what has been originally recommended. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Vanasek? Seeing none, Representative Ruth?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just wanted to point out that when we look at the bill, and when I first looked at these numbers, it was pretty staggering. I'm thinking, you know, are we really realistic here? And that's why we've handed out all of these handouts that you see. Please take a look at them, because the dollars are there. And that's why those are the projects that we actually have. So if we went ahead and actually funded them, this is what it would cost. So it is staggering. We know that we can't possibly get this. The governor has in $30 million for bridges and $10 million for roads. So I would really urge you to look at this seriously, because our entire state really needs these. Our engineers still tell us that the bridges is our number one issue for them, and we're finding, as Mr. Vanasek has said, that we need the local roads. Our local governments are not able to build up to the state roads without this help. So appreciate you willing to listen again and to have this help.
And Representative Roof, we also have Ms. Donahoe would like to testify as well, is my understanding. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And certainly we would like to reiterate the comments that have been made. A few years ago, the Alliance worked to get the Local Road Improvement Program created because our members became very frustrated at the inability to increase the gas tax or the license tab fees, and we were encouraged to look for alternatives and look for creative ways to increase funding for our road system. And so we looked to the capital bonding bill as another option to provide some additional funding for the roads and bridges on the local system that have not seen an increase in their funding since the last gas tax increase in 1988. So we would certainly urge your support for as much funding as we can see in the capital bonding bill, and urge you to be our advocates in making transportation a higher priority and getting the funding that we desperately need for these projects. So thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else would like to testify in favor or in opposition to House File 2803? Representative Hertz, do you have a question?
Well, I have a question, Madam Chair, on this legislative bridge list. I just opened it to Hennepin County here, and is anybody that can explain to me, let's see, Hennepin County, the middle one there.
Representative Earhart, what year are you on? If you flip to the front of your packet, there should be a year.
2006, legislative bridge list.
And what page are you on?
I'm on page 3, Hennepin County. And the mid one, I would like to have that describe what's going on there. Estimated project cost 1.7. Federal funds are 723, and so forth. Can you tell me what those are all about?
Is there anybody here that can tell Representative Earhart about the bridge on Highway 61?
I mean, it could be any of these, Madam Chair, but that I just picked that because I was looking at Hennepin County, see what they were up to, and nobody knows. Well, there goes a whole sheaf of 400 projects, maybe 4,000 that we don't know anything about, but that's okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Ruth is here. We'll get that information.
I don't know.
For you, so you know it's for here. You might have an answer.
Oh. All right.
Mr. Jonas, welcome to the committee. Our phone-a-friend.
Yes.
Madam Chair, my name is Rick Jonas from the State Aid Office. Representative Earhart, this is a bridge master list. We ask the counties and the cities every fall to send us a list of the bridges that they anticipate repairing, replacing with funds over the next 5 years. And then we pull out the bridges that are just in the next two-year period and put together this master list for the use of meetings such as this. We do not have any more descriptive information on the bridges from Hennepin County than what you have in front of you, showing the road numbers, CASA 5, CASA 61. We can see that a couple of these projects are receiving federal funds, and so they were approved through Met Council process for federal funds, and that they're looking to put some state aid money in there, and then they're looking at some bridge bonding to provide some final funding in the final column. So there are four projects in Hennepin County that need some bridge bonding. The exact locations of those, I could get you those tomorrow.
Madam Chair, I just was wondering what adds up to 1.7 here. They're going to get 723,000 from federal funds, 444 from state aid, 87,000 from local taxes, and 400. They're applying for 400 in bonds. Am I looking at these right? Okay. That's all I wanted to know, just how to read the charts. Thank you.
I think you figured out yourself. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Jonas. Mr. Solem, if you'd like to provide your name for the record and your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Solem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'll keep my comments extremely brief because you've already heard from our colleagues at the county level, and this is an area where I think all local units are in agreement that we need money for roads, we need money for bridges. At the township level alone, this year we are expected to have 846 deficient bridges. Now that may not sound like an overwhelming number, and the average cost of that bridge is approximately $140,000 at the township level. Again, very small in comparison to the county costs. But when you start looking at the size of the budgets in the rural areas and the size of the townships trying to fund these projects, and you multiply that 140,000 times the 846 deficient bridges, it adds up to a very large number. And that's just at our rural level. We are responsible for approximately somewhere between 43% and 47% of the road miles in the state of Minnesota, depending on whose numbers you wish to look at. I believe that makes us the single largest unit of government for the most lane miles of roads that we are responsible for. And quite frankly, you don't get to any of these other systems in the rural areas until you come off of a township road. You don't get the product to market. You don't get it to the ethanol plants and the grain elevators or anything else you might have interest in until you get it off the farm. And that means you got to get it off of our roads first. So, it's just nice when we have a pot that's large enough to share, some of that money starts to trickle down to the townships, and we're greatly appreciative of that.
All right, thank you very much. President Roof, did you have any concluding comments?
Nothing further, just appreciate the time, Madam Chair and members.
All right, thank you very much. Representative Earhart.
Representative Roof, do you have any idea how this splits between rural and metro?
But Mr. Jonas might be able to help us with that as well.
And Mr. Jonas actually gave us Association of Minnesota Counties the list, so probably that's the question.
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Jonas.
Sure,
we're glad you're here today.
That's a rare heart.
Madam Chair, regarding the bonding program, the bridges that we fund typically are outside of the metropolitan area. And this last year, we had the Sauk Rapids bridges, which was $15 million of the $40 million. And so We spent approximately 80% of the bridge bonds, the $40 million that we received from the last session, in greater Minnesota, and then 20% was in the metropolitan area. And with the local road improvement program, the $10 million, the $5 million for safety, the statute did specify that one-third was metro, two-thirds was outstate, and that's the way the money was spent.
I think what Representative Earhart was asking is in these 06 and 07 lists, that you have some idea of the breakdown of what percentage of the needs are metro and what are rural.
Yeah, Madam Chair, what the bonding requests that are in the program here that you're offering, how does that split?
Mr. Jonas, do you have any idea, or is that something you could provide for the committee?
Madam Chair, I'd be glad to provide it to the committee. It's no doubt a rural program, but we have not made the split.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Ruth. And next we have Representative Hansen up for House File 2513, in which he's asking for $2 million for a study for Robert Street Corridor Transit Way. Representative Hornstein, would you like to move this bill to be considered by the committee?
I'd happily move House File 2513 for
thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hansen. I see you've got the fine Dakota County Commissioner with you here today.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm pleased to be here today to talk about House File 2513. It's a study for transit options along Robert Street corridor. You should have in front of you a map that we also have a large example of the transit shed, and then some additional information. The green sheet I'm having passed out is an amendment that just clarifies. We introduced 2513 last spring before the end of session. And since we've been working with collaborators, and we have some here today, we felt there was a better definition of the transit area that we would be looking at, and that's what the proposed amendment is. And I'd ask if we could, I apologize for not getting that in an engrossment form, but if we could get that into the, to be the example of the bill that we're looking at.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The changes between the amendment and the actual bill are, defines the corridor that is being studied. It takes it down to Dakota County Road 42 in Rosemont.
All right, Representative Hornstein moves to amend House File 2513 as is reflected in what we'll call the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have with me Dakota County Commissioner Will Branning, who's also head of the Dakota County Rail Authority. In the past 6 to 9 months, we've had a number of meetings between Dakota County and Ramsey County, the cities, the county commissioners, the educational institutions that are in the travel corridor, looking at the opportunity to study transit options along Robert Street. Our study does not prescribe a mode of transportation, nor does it prescribe a route. We are calling it Robert Street because that's kind of the backbone of the area that we're looking at. I do want to point out a couple of items on the color map. You'll see some green areas that are there. The Lafayette Bridge construction, looking at, is in this travel shed. Changes that may need to occur there in the future. The St. Paul Union Depot has received some additional funds and is looking for funding with the Central Corridor. But I want to draw your attention to the Egan-Inver Grove area that's there. That particular area has just been approved for sewer and water, and we estimate that within probably 6 years there will be 10,000 more people that will be in that small confined area, and our infrastructure that we currently have isn't quite designed for that. And so having transit options, looking at the study to come back with recommendations is a good step. I will draw your attention to the last page and the broad-based support that we have. We have resolutions from the cities of West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Sunfish Lake, Rosemont, Inver Hills Community College, University of Minnesota, Umore Park, Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority, Dakota County Regional Rail Authority, Dakota County Chambers of Commerce, the Transit for Livable Communities, and the Sierra Club. So we've got a broad coalition, and another coalition member has just joined us, Ramsey County Commissioner Rafael Ortega with the Ramsey County Rail Authority. So I'll turn it over to Commissioner Branning.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Branning, if you'll state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Will Branning, Dakota County Commissioner from the 7th District in Dakota County, which is all of Rosemont and most of Apple Valley. I'm also the Regional Rail Authority Chair for Dakota County. Additionally, I have several important positions within the Cedar Avenue corridor, and I'll address those a little bit later as I go through the presentation. I have with me Rafael Ortega, also the Regional Rail Authority Chair from Ramsey County, and between Ramsey County and the Dakota County, we've put together a coalition of steering committee members and a large base of support to move forward with a study in the Robert Street Corridor. We call it the Robert Street Corridor because it is a band through Dakota County that's larger than the Robert Street itself, but it incorporates and accommodates commercial development and two very important educational facilities within Dakota County, connecting to the multimodal transit and hub in Ramsey County and St. Paul. We have undertaken this study because it takes a long time to put a thing such as a transit way together. In the Cedar Avenue corridor, we started our first approach to Met Council and to the state legislature for funding was in 1997. We have now spent approximately $2.4 million in that quarter, and we're just now moving into the engineering study. We've completed the feasibility and the alternative analysis on that quarter. We anticipate and would model the Robert Street Transitway study in a comparable way, looking at a band through the Dakota County area. It's shown on the map that you have. It would run approximately 14 miles from the transit facility, Union Station, and multimodal hub in St. Paul to approximately the Dakota County Technical College on County Road 42, following a corridor of either the Highway 3, Trunk Highway 3, or State Highway 52. Either of those would be a major potential route. But because of the analysis, letting the analysis, feasibility analysis, move forward, that has to do with the ridership, it has to do with the engineering, not engineering so much as what is feasible along there for route, whether we follow those routes, whether the right-of-way, whether the environmental, whether the ridership, and all of those elements are important to the selected corridor. Again, using the model put together by the Cedar Avenue corridor. The mode of operation the mode of transportation will really follow in the following, which is the alternative analysis. That'll take place of whether it should be light rail, whether it should be rapid bus, bus rapid transit, whether it should be commuter transit, whether it should be personal rapid transit. All of those elements are taking place in studying the alternative analysis.
Excuse me, Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and to that point, and I think this is a really excellent, you know, potential corridor. But, you know, you mentioned in your oral testimony and on line 12 of this lead all bus and or light rail transit. It's my understanding that, you know, Dakota County didn't really embrace rail on Cedar, and then there were also problems with the Dam Patch corridor a few years ago, which is a commuter rail line from Northfield into Minneapolis. And I'm just, is there any kind of change of thought in terms of how Dakota County is viewing rail these days? Because I was surprised by that inclusion in here. Encouraged, I support it, but I'm just wondering if there's any kind of a change that's taken place in the last few years.
Mr. Branning.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't believe there's a change. The fact is that Cedar Avenue, to put rail across the Cedar Avenue or the Minnesota River would have been an extremely expensive nor environmentally feasible. So the feasibility analysis ruled that out in addition to the cost. But here in the Robert Street corridor, we don't have that similar type of, we have already the crossings across the river that are possible to be used. So let the feasibility work that issue out.
So then, Madam Chair and Commissioner, it's the bridge issue. That's really kind of the deal breaker on sort of the county's view on rail in these various corridors. So, okay.
Well, Representative Hornstein, I think, too, there were big, huge issues with the area south of the Mall of America and the neighborhood there and that end, and certainly it's no surprise there's not a lot of support for rail, and at least a portion of the Hennepin County delegation as well. So I think that contributed to the bus situation as well.
Okay. Thank you,
Madam Chair. And that's true. I mean, in the cost elements, when you go through residential element areas that are not in favor of those kinds of things, and when you put rail through, it's noisier. And if you follow existing pathways as we would see this, we might not have the same. But again, the feasibility study will surely define those elements.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Thank you.
And we've got to get moving along here, so if you want to, we've got at most five more minutes. I don't know how you want to parse out your time. I see you have lots of handouts, and I'm assuming that Commissioner Ortega would like to speak as well.
So. Commissioner Ortega.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rafael Ortega, Ramsey County Commissioner for District 5, which is entirely in St. Paul. Good evening. Let me just, in the interest of time, let me just say that the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority, after due consideration and deliberation, we unanimously support the study of this corridor. We think it's very timely because we have the development of the Central Corridor, the Union Depot, and we all know that the Lafayette Bridge is a bridge that's going, it's number one on the list. It needs to be considered. It has some real structural issues. So we think it's timely that we look at that entire area as the corridor comes through St. Paul to be more effective and efficient in terms of the dollars and how we do our planning for transit.
And can you refresh my memory, the regional Ramsey County Regional Rail, how much did you back for Central Corridor and Union Depot? I'm just wondering, dollar-wise, what has regional Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority supported?
In terms of support from...
Well, there's in the case of Central Corridor, there's various proposals. I know some groups have supported the $50 million. I don't know what the range of money is. We're going to hear about Union Depot. I'm just trying to add up here what Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority has supported for rail bonding.
We are supporting $50 million for the Central Corridor, and that is to match the federal as we move forward using a date of 2008. So we're moving backwards. And then $12.5 million to match the $50 million we just received from the federal government.
All right. Thank you. Are you finished with your testimony?
Yes, I want to make sure we have some time on this corridor.
Are there additional questions for the commissioners? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't quite see where your Robert Street Transit Corridor ends up down there, but does that curve over and end up in Lakeville by chance?
Representative Earhart, I don't even think Lakeville's on this map, so you can relax.
Madam Chair, he wasn't asking for an answer.
No, I can help you out there. It terminates in what appears to be Rosemont, according to this map.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions for the bill author or testifier? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, members, we will now go back to Central Corridor. And Representative Hausman, we were able to listen to your business leaders that were here, but my understanding is that there's a Mr. Morris from the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority that would like to address that. And then if you could help us understand the range of dollar amounts being requested and what they would be used for, and that We heard from the Met Council that they wanted $10 million and got $2.5 million in the governor's recommendation, and I believe your bill is for $50 million. Is that correct?
And, Madam Chair, just by way of setting the context again, it was significant that the business leaders who were here represented virtually the entire metropolitan area, including the president of the Burnsville Chamber of Commerce and Minneapolis, and they represented, what did they say, 24 different chambers. And
Representative Hausman, I don't know if it was a conspiracy, but I've served on many task forces with the gentleman from Burnsville, and Mr. Klingel lives in Lakeville, and our kids went to school together. So
that is,
I don't know if you guys picked those people on purpose or not. But.
As far as I know, they serve in specific capacities. Mr. Van Helden is the chair of the Metropolitan Coalition of Chambers, and then I think just having Minneapolis chamber as the, but that's an interesting small world.
Yeah.
I remember, I see Representative Abrams is out of the room right now. I remember when he sat at a table like this and expressed his frustration a few years ago when we were talking about a single corridor, and he said, I just felt there was a plan, a system. And, of course, those of us who have been involved in this for a long time know, in fact, that is exactly what is developing. And all of the parts of the region tend to come together as each of these corridors advances. There are reasons to be concerned, and Representative Earhart just handed me the editorial from the paper this morning. Our economic competitors are ahead of us. And by that I mean Denver and Phoenix and St. Louis and Dallas and Houston. All of those cities, all of those regions are our economic competitors. And at a certain point, the business community understands if we don't do a very rapid catch-up, it will in fact affect the economic health of the entire state. The metro region being a pretty powerful economic engine for the whole state. So I think the business community is coming together as they have not before. As we advance various corridors. The Central Corridor, reviewing just a bit of what you heard earlier, it has actually been identified in this country as the most viable transit corridor. And so there is huge attention to this. Despite that, we know the city of Denver currently has 4 light rail transit lines in development, and so we are keenly aware of the need to kind of get our act together. Federal funding will cover 50% of the total capital cost of the project. The non-federal match of $420 million is required from state, county, and regional sources. And that, I think, gets at that issue of why we continue to seek $50 million, because we see that data down the road when we need to demonstrate to the federal government that we in fact have that match. Other regions, if they have a half-cent sales tax, for example, that is sufficient to show the federal government that there's a funding source. Were we, for example, to pass the constitutional amendment in November, that would be a significant statement to the federal government that we have a funding source. That would make all of these discussions so much easier, I think. The kind of competition we face now is not with the big cities, but Charlotte, Columbus, Louisville, Norfolk, that's the level of competition that is facing us in Washington. I think we could say much more, and I think we will just go with questions, just given the time you have. And and you don't have testimony as such, but he's here as a staff person to answer questions, and we have, I should note, we have two Ramsey County commissioners who returned for the afternoon. Commissioner Tony Carter is here, and you just heard from Commissioner Rafael Ortega, and I thank them for coming back this afternoon.
Thank you. Could you refresh the committee? At one point, there was some study being done between the commuter rail line that I believe is a block or two north of University, and then, of course, the decision on the mode selection on University, kind of what happened with the commuter versus University Avenue, and then where we are at as far as selecting a mode for street.
One of the things that's clear is the testimony you heard from the few gentlemen this morning who raised questions told me they hadn't been paying attention, because this has been the most studied corridor, I would say, for more than a decade. And we have addressed all of the issues, for example, going down Highway 94. The chamber, by the way, 10 years ago, if they had been here, that would have been the route I think they preferred at the time, as I recall. So we've learned a lot about, with LRT particularly, what works and what doesn't. You heard Met Council talk about the measures that they're doing right now as they continue to look at the numbers for bus rapid transit and LRT. The Representative Leader has been around here so long that he already was giving me the answer about when we look at LRT and its cost effectiveness, we really can look 50 years out. The kind of capital investment for rail is much different from buses. With buses, that capital investment repeats itself every 12 years, I believe. And so the numbers, and I suspect Steve Morse can give them specifically, help show us over a 10-year period what kind of ridership would happen with buses versus rail. And I think when does it become very obvious that bus rapid transit doesn't meet the need anymore? Is it 15?
Welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve Morris with the Ramsey County Regional Railroad Authority. A couple of responses. First, on the issue of the commuter rail and to the north, or the railroad tracks to the north, that was looked at early on, but that's operating freight railroad, and much like North Star or any other commuter rail line, you can only run a few trips a day. The kind of demand that we have for transit on Central Corridor is looking like two-car trains running every 7.5 minutes. There's no way you could intersperse those two services together. In addition, we looked at some ridership projections on if the Red Rock commuter rail line were in operation, and we think that would be a good thing, between the two downtowns. Makes very little difference in the ridership on the Central Corridor, because they serve two quite different markets. One is the kind of the long-range commuter market into downtown St. Paul and Minneapolis, and the other is the day-to-day transit trips. In addition, on the question of capacity, as Ms. McCarthy from the Met Council mentioned earlier today, the projections for the Central Corridor Light Rail line are based on have ridership demand that would require groups of three articulated buses running every 6 minutes. We're still trying to wrestle with what that means, because we know that's not realistic. That's not service that we can provide effectively. So it's a very busy transit corridor. It's expected to get busier in the future, and it creates the capacity problems we've been talking about for buses.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions for Representative Hausman or Mr. Morris? I just have one additional one. As long as you're representing the Ramsey County Regional Rail, have you prioritized your request for money?
It's better answered by
policy. But they have come up with a policy, I believe, and that the Central is their first priority, and then Union Depot.
Okay. Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You're asking for how much in bonding
The request from the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority is $50 million.
Okay, well, how, Madam Chair,
Representative Earhart,
how does that work with the $50 million, that special, whatever you call it, that came from the federal government?
That was union, Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, that was, the $50 million was for Union Depot.
Oh,
we could segue into the Union Depot if you're ready for that. But that
Representative
Hausman, let's move to that, and then you can explain that. That would be House File 3251.
And Madam Chair, do you want me to move that
by the committee?
Okay. There is. I don't know, was there a handout that went out? Does everybody have that? Okay. Just briefly, this is a building built in 1923 and at one point actually serviced 200-plus passenger trains daily, if you can imagine the hubbub in that building. It's on the National Historic Register. It is one of those treasured buildings downtown, and though there are no passenger trains serving the depot, it is the intention to reuse this particular building to create a modern transportation center. The Regional Rail Authority established something called the Locate Task Force. They brought everybody to the table, and again, it included local elected officials, it included the business community, Amtrak, it included surrounding counties, because the depot eventually would be where a number of corridors would come. The Rush Line from the north, Red Rock from the south, you just heard about the Robert Street proposal. The Locate Task Force looked at a whole bunch of sites in St. Paul to say, where would that hub be logically identified? And they ruled out lots of other sites and determined that, in fact, the depot still is the best place for a transportation hub in the East Metro. There has been some property purchased near the depot that will be needed as well, so that the depot can serve the Red Rock, the Rush Line, and Metro Transit buses, which of course would also need to interface as all those modes come together. These state funds are Union Depot was awarded $50 million in federal funds over a five-year period, and the state funds are being requested to match those federal funds, and for property acquisition, engineering, and construction. Again, we have people here to ask questions. I don't know how it would perhaps be better just to go with questions that you have rather than taking too much more time on testimony.
And I do have a couple questions. What is the estimated total cost of this project? And given that the $50 million is over a period of time, would it not be feasible for this local match to maybe be phased in over two bonding bills as opposed to one?
Madam Chair, the total project cost involves about three phases. The first phase would be Amtrak, intercity buses, light rail, and Metro Transit buses. And that first phase is projected to cost about $103 million. The future phases of Red Rock and Rush Line commuter rail and eventual high-speed rail to Chicago, which would understandably could probably occur over the next 20 to 30 years, they're expected to bring the total project cost up to about $272 million in 2003 dollars. So the first phase at $103 million is what the Rail Authority and its partners are trying to work on today. And a big chunk of that would be this $50 million in federal funding and Rail Authority funds and hopefully help from the state bonding bill.
And if I might, how much in Rail Authority funds have been committed to this project? You said $107 million in the first phase?
The first phase would cost about $103 million. The Rail Authority has provided some local planning funds and has purchased the property that Representative Hausman spoke of for approximately $5 million. They also increased their levy this year to start to prepare for that project.
It is
for for money beyond the budget.
For funding, yes.
But is it fair to say that you would likely be back asking the state for additional money to get you to your $103 million?
Madam Chair, that would certainly be a decision for the commissioners to make, but a project of this size, I would think, at some time in the future, would be discussed.
And are there any plans for local dollars to take up that gap of that almost $50 million at this time?
Madam Chair, the Rail Authority is just now in the very preliminary planning stages of this project and hasn't developed plans yet for how the funding will work. But there would be funding from the different corridors. There would be likely county funding and additional federal funding.
Welcome back, Commissioner Ortega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I could definitely let you know that the sentiment and the vision of the Ramsey Rail Authority, this is a project we undertook 4 years ago, and it's a vision of our board, and we have support for this vision. The county this year has levied preparation and anticipation of matching our share, both the Central and the Union Depot. We do intend to go back to the federal government. To be quite honest with you, we would like to get as much federal dollars as we can to help pay for the Union Depot. Will we be back here? Probably yes, with your share of our local match.
Thank you. Any additional questions on the Union Depot project? All right. Thank you very much, Representative Hausman and gentlemen.
Madam Chair, one last comment. As we speak now, we have $10 million requested for an additional $10 million for the Union Depot into the federal government on top of the 50, and that is looking very promising also.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Additional information. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Representative Magnus, there was some discussion when we had Representative Seifert here and the fact that our railroad service improvement fund money was only in the form of loans. And so there's been some interest and talk about this committee supporting a portion or all of those dollars in the form of grants versus loans. And I believe Representative Magnus has language in the form of amendment, but the committee were to support this language, we would just bring it as rider language to the bonding committee tomorrow. And it's in the form of the AMD-02 amendment that was included in your packets. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you pretty much outlined the intent of this. When we did have the Minnesota Valley Railroad come in, it's been obvious to me for several years that some of these short line railroads, privately owned, as it says in the amendment here, are struggling, and in some cases just need a little bit of help to get them to be more competitive and do a better job. And I think if we can look at some grant money, my amendment says 80% of the cost of any rail line. And it also, if you look at the bottom down there, line 1.23, rehabilitation, that's another thing that came up the other day when we had testimony, I think it was last week, from that railroad entity. A lot of the short line, again, rails are looking at the ethanol plants locating on their lines, soybean processing plants, biodiesel plants, whatever. They're having to upgrade the lines to handle the larger rail cars now that are most of the Class 1 railroads are using on their main lines for unit trains. And so I'd like to bring this forth and look at some grant money help for them.
Are there any questions? Representative Earhart.
Well, Madam Chair, I thought you said some of these lines are privately owned. Are we going to be granting money to a private entity?
My understanding is that the new language says rail facilities owned by a public entity.
Entity.
That would be on line 1.8.
Madam Chair.
That was not very hard.
What about the private railroads? They're going to be left to do whatever on their own out there? Most of the short lines, Madam Chair, I think are privately owned, aren't they?
My understanding is most are. I don't know.
Can they be competitive then, Madam Chair, or if we're going to put money into, I don't know, what rail lines are owned by a public entity? Give me an example.
Lisbon Magna.
Well, if you look in our handout here and you look back at the testimony we had.
I'd rather not look at that thing, if you don't mind.
Minnesota Valley, well, I'm just using this to illustrate it. The Minnesota Valley Railroad, it's about halfway through here. Minnesota Valley Regional Railroad Authority would be one that that I'm most concerned about. The one we had testimony from a week or so ago. And that's a publicly owned entity, I guess.
Well,
from Representative Earhart, if there's concerns, we can certainly have more discussion as over this as a committee. I'm disappointed that Mr. Apetz isn't here, as this was an initiative that he was working on. He's not in the room to answer some of the questions that I think the committee would probably like answered. So, Representative Magnus, what do you think? I don't want to move forward this if there's questions still to be answered and people are uncomfortable. There's certainly more ways that we can get this issue addressed through a regular committee process. So, Representative Magnus, what's your pleasure?
Well, that's
fine too, Madam Chair. Again, I'm not a technical expert on these issues, but my goal was to get something in front of the bonding committee to look at. Instead of loans, look at grant monies. That's my goal.
And Representative Hausman, do you know when the bonding bill is actually scheduled to come out of the bonding committee?
My understanding is it is supposed to be on the floor April 4th.
I think we have some time here. What I would like to do is to just hold this over, see if we can get some of the interested parties before the committee on Thursday. We do have eminent domain and a couple other bills, but I think almost everybody in the committee has already heard eminent domain and some other committee as well.
I haven't heard it.
Well, you're in for a treat, Representative Earhart. I think I heard it for 4 weeks in local government. So, but anyway, that's another story we won't go into. Was it five? Says Mr. Kane, who was there as well. So let's do this. Let's hold over for Thursday. Let's get people to care about this issue. The rail director from MnDOT gets some feedback, and I think that will still allow us some time to present some proposed language to capital investment if, in fact, the committee is willing to do that. And then just one final note, a reminder of the memo that Mr. Walls did that's included in your packet that also talks about with some scenarios. And Mr. Wells, if you'd like to just go over that real briefly for the committee, give them a chance to look at it. You can explain which each page of data, what it reflects. And there's the information was provided to Mr. Wells from the various entities, and he'll explain some of the assumptions that were made. It's for the purpose of just taking a look at where we're going with our operating costs for transit and our funding sources for the next 10 years. Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair, members, you should have a memo and a spreadsheet in your packets. I'm going to skip over the cover letter and just go to the first page of the spreadsheet. And what it is that you're looking at is a rough projection of the next 10 years of funding for transit with a couple of things are set aside in here. On the top line, there's a projection of what MVEST is projected to be through 2009, finance forecasts for a four-year period, and after that, an inflationary increase of 2.5% per year was added, taking us out through 2015. You can see beneath that there's Greater Minnesota current law is projected. They're currently at 1.43% of MVEST. In 2008, they're projected to fall to 1.25% of MVEST. And then below that line is Greater Minnesota Transit, their percentage of MVEST, if the constitutional amendment, as commonly understood, were to pass with the phase-in suggested by several parties in the past. Below that is the same projection for Metro Transit. Their current percentage is 21.5% of MVEST. So current law would reflect that for 06 and 07. In 08, they're projected, or they're set to fall to 20.5, and that is projected through 2015, and then their portion if the constitutional amendment passes. I was asked to include general fund appropriations but flatline them after the end of this biennium. So those numbers are listed in the center of that page. And then down below just shows their total state support, both under current law or with the constitutional amendment passage, that would total their projected MVEST and flatline general fund and give you a rough projection of what it is they're expected to receive over the next 10 years. Madam Chair, then going to the second page, I asked MnDOT to send me what it was that they thought their needs would be over the next 10-year period, and I asked them for a scenario that would show maintaining current service with inflation, maintaining current service with inflation and their long-term goals, and a scenario in between. You can see what they had sent me. The top third is maintaining the current service level with inflation. And as you can see, there are the two scenarios, the current law and the constitutional amendment revenues. And then below that, the bolded areas show their revenues. And as you can see in red, and there were a few of those that didn't basically turn red, but it shows that there will be a shortfall under both scenarios for Greater Minnesota Transit with both under current law and with constitutional amendment just to maintain their current service level even if the constitutional amendment were to pass. The line below that just shows MVEST what is required to meet their goal. They're currently receiving for 06 and 07 1.43. Any numbers that appear in blue, and again, I'm not sure what the problem was with 2010 or 2012, those should be blue. Anywhere where there's blue numbers is the MVEST that would be required to meet the goal, but blue just represents that it would be above the phase-in of the constitutional amendment. They would need that phase-in plus additional dollars. So as you can see, in 2012, or in 2013, under the constitutional amendment, they would be receiving 2% of MVEST revenues, but they would need 2.12 if their general fund were flatlined to meet that need. Madam Chair, the next section just shows the same basic information, but they have that's meeting two-thirds of their long-term goals, which include countywide service in all greater Minnesota counties and increased service in all counties currently served, especially to elderly populations. And Madam Chair, below that is the same information but for meeting 100% of their long-term goals. And as you can see, in 2015, if the constitutional amendment were to pass and if they had a flat line in their general fund appropriation, they would need 6.4% of MVEST rather than the 2% they're scheduled to receive under passage of the constitutional amendment. I assume that one of the reasons that these percentages, it seems that Greater Minnesota is receiving a shortage of funds, is that their constitutional amendment percentage it only goes from 1.25% that they're scheduled to receive in 2008 to 2%, which only gives them a boost of about $5 million over current law revenues in 2015, and that's on roughly $35 million worth of statewide service. Madam Chair, did you want me to take questions?
I'm sorry, Representative Hollison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, the premise, why would we flatline Greater Minnesota Transit if that would put them behind? I mean, these are not staggering amounts. It would seem, one would say, we've always had a commitment to Greater Minnesota Transit, and so we wouldn't flatline their general fund appropriation.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I was asked to just keep the general fund appropriations constant for this exercise because there's no way to predict what we would do each year. Mm-hmm. However, along that point, if you look at just taking a look at the middle scenario, in 2015, they're projected with the constitutional amendment passage to have a shortfall of $16 million, and that may seem like a broad gulf as far as their funding goes. That shortfall is over an eight-year period, and so if the legislature decided to give them additional general fund in their appropriation, you could do it by adding $2 million a year over that eight-year period. For this exercise, I was asked to keep that flatlined to just show what percentage of MVEST they would require if we were no longer using general fund as a tool.
And Representative Hausman, the reason that I asked him to do that is I don't think we've done very good in competing against other needs in the general fund. In fact, we saw the fight last year just to get the cash to get the deficit addressed in transit. It held out to the very end of the year. And with the constitutional amendment passing and increased revenues coming as a result of that phase-in, I thought it was safer to assume no additional general fund funding increases, but only that would occur as a result of the MVEST transfer.
And Madam Chair, what occurs to me, of course, is the transportation problem is so big that we know we're going to need gas tax, license tax, motor vehicle sales tax, general fund dollars to meet the need of transportation. So what would worry me a little bit is, and I actually did an exercise like this too from a slightly different perspective, which I'll talk about, because anytime you put this on paper, it assumes that we've already made some future decisions about each of those pieces, gas tax, license tax, motor vehicle sales tax. What I, in fact, asked Mr. Walsh to do, and of course I don't file, so I don't have this available. My question to him was, suppose we took that 40% and we used it as debt service for bonding. What could we do for these transit corridors that we're trying to move forward on? Because in my mind, we could catch up with some of our economic competitors if we sent a signal to Washington saying, we have a funding source, and so you can be assured of some matching funds. I mean, that's a what if. But I would assume until we actually pass this amendment, that's all conjecture. We don't know for sure what we would use any part of it. I don't know if next council is still in the room. I would just be curious whether they feel. I mean, this 3.2% annual. Annual rate on the existing system, is that a number you got from them, or would they feel comfortable with the projections that you're...
Representative Hausman, it took the council a long time to get the figures. I think we started this in January, maybe even December, and so I think Mr. Wallace can talk about the discussions that he had with the Met Council people, and the cover memo also has some explanation, and certainly they're still in the audience and would be happy to comment as well. Mr. Wallace.
Madam Chair, that's correct. I'll get to those points in just a second. I do want to try to head off one question ahead of time. You will see that from these pages, it does show some shortfalls for Metro and Greater Minnesota Transit in 2007, and part of that is due to the fact that they were basing their expenditure plans on November forecast dollars. In the February forecast, the projected MVEST collections continued to fall as it has done for the last couple years, and so they're showing shortfalls there, but as we know, they received increases last year. We're not quite at fiscal 2007 yet, and I believe that they can make some adjustments for that in the meantime to probably deal with those issues. But that is why they're showing, if the question arises, why are they already showing a deficit, it's because they gave me numbers based on what they thought they would have to spend, how much they were going to expend, and then those revenues fall. And so I'm assuming they have plans to sort of close that gap.
And the Met Council used the 3.2, but I think Mr. Wells showed what historical over the last 6 years is closer to 6-something.
Madam Chair, yes, and I can get to that in a moment.
Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, do you really think that Greater Minnesota gives a rat's tail about transit? I mean, their attitude has been, that's what it boils down to. They don't want to do anything for transit, whether it be if they get the $6 million they got, which was more than Metro got, in relationship to replacing what they needed. They don't care about transit, except in selected areas. St. Cloud cares, Duluth cares, and probably Rochester. I mean, why should we be worried about them?
Well,
they're not here to say anything, but why should we worry about them?
Well, Representative Earhart, I think from my perspective, some of the most, what I view to be cost-effective transit programs that I've been seen in this committee are some of the rural systems where even they might even have volunteer drivers, and for a buck or two, people get a ride to the doctor, and I think they meet a huge need in Greater Minnesota. And so I'm not sure who you're saying doesn't care about transit in Greater
people
Minnesota.
People are voting for the bills last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's who I think. Now,
I'm not going to make comment on that one. I'll just get in trouble.
I agree with you. If they wake up to the fact that they have a lot of needs out there, maybe they'd say, well, you got needs too. But let's do a little horse trading. You give us some money for transit out here, we'll give you some money for transit there.
All right. Well, let's let Mr. Walls finish his presentation here.
Madam Chair, moving to page 3, Met Council was also asked to provide sort of a projection over the next 10 years. The format on page 3 is a little different because they chose to present the material in a different fashion. But what you will see is that from what they provided, the Met Council assumed a 3.2% inflation rate. And on their base bus operating, and I believe Hiawatha as well, and those are reflected on the last, or on the first two lines. They also had needs to meet goals that they had for increased service, and that is expressed in the base system expansion line, how much money they'll need to do that expansion under their own goals. Following that are the line items for all the additional operating money needed to operate potential transit ways such as Botno, Cedar, I-35 busway, Central Corridor, North Star. Botno
Northwest
is
busway.
Mm-hmm. Northwest busway. And so they provided all those numbers, but what you're seeing is the total dollars needed, not just from the state. They presented things a little differently. So below that, it totals out the amount that they will need, and then they had different categories of revenue that weren't from the state, federal, fare box, advertising, and so on. Those are all totaled to get to a number of the metro system's needs from the state of Minnesota for assistance. Going down to the bottom, it performs the same calculation, their current law revenues or their constitutional amendment revenues. They chose to express it a little differently in that they wanted to take a little bit of the time for an operating reserve, and so those dollars are not reflected here. It's a small percentage of the total funding each year. Under this scenario, with the 3.2% inflation rate on the existing system, You can see in 2008, because of the downturn in MVEST revenues, they're showing that it comes up a little short, and they would need a little additional dollars over what they were projected to receive under the constitutional amendment, which was 24.225, I believe, rather than the 24% they would require. But it does show that under their planning estimates, they would be able to meet their goals with the MVEST percentage, the constitutional passage, through 2015 for their operating needs, were they to use those dollars for operating. Madam Chair, that brings me to page 4. When I had a discussion with Met Council, I questioned a little bit the inflation rate of 3.2. I thought it might be on the low side. They're very confident that they can meet the 3.2% inflation rate over the next few years. I did look back to 1999, which was far as I could find from what I have in my files, and from about 1999 to the current time period, there's been an annual inflation rate, if you smooth it, of about 6.2%. The Met Council had some issues that there was one year that was sort of an outlier. There was a contract issue. They've had 23% increases in fuel costs over that period. They've had very rapidly increasing health care. So they provided me with some information that they would be comfortable expressing the historical rate over that six-year period as being about 5% at a smooth rate. The chairman asked me to prepare a different scenario using 5% inflation. And what you see before you is the same information. If the historical rate proves closer to true over the next 10 years, that scenario shows that they will have some deficit problems with their operating funds in the out years that separate the farther we go along. But again, the 3.2% the Met Council was comfortable with, 5% sort of represents the last few years, and both going forward are essentially estimates. Madam Chair, that brings me to page 5. And these are just a combination of the different scenarios and what they would require from MVEST to meet their funding goals. This, however, does also presumes that general fund dollars would be kept constant. And so the different scenarios are on the top line just shows how the phase-in of the MVEST dedication would be put into effect if the amendment were to pass, or is assumed would go into effect. And then you can see in year 2012, 40% of MVEST is where it phases into for transit, 2% to Greater Minnesota, and 38% to the Met Council. There are different scenarios versus that show there are three with the Met Council assumed rate of 3.2% inflation, combined with Greater Minnesota maintaining current service, meeting two-thirds of their goals, meeting 100% of their goals. Then those three scenarios are repeated, but with a 5% inflation rate, and I see, Madam Chair, it should say 5% inflation rate on the two of the last scenarios, the second and third from the bottom, excuse me. And then members, the chair asked what would be required if the for some reason sort of a doomsday scenario that we ran into budget deficit problems and the general fund appropriation for Met Council were to disappear. I didn't know how to phase that in, so what I did was went to year 2012 when MVEST was fully phased in, deleted the revenue from the general fund flatlined appropriation, and just represented how much of a loss that would be in terms of MVEST dollars. And you can see all the under the different scenarios in the different years what percentage of MVEST would be required to meet full funding goals versus on the top portion how much is projected to be phased in if the amendment passes. Madam Chair, I understand a lot of that might be confusing, and I'll answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Walls before Met Council has a chance to state their case? All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judge Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Met Council. And, Madam Chair, you are correct. You had been waiting for these numbers for a long time. We had a number of discussions regarding that, and I apologize again. But the numbers that we believe that we presented to you and Mr. Walls, we believe that we're comfortable with the 3.2% of rate of inflation that we are projecting over the next few years. Actually, we had it projected out to 2020. And Arlene McCarthy is here with me, and we can explain that. I don't necessarily know if we want to get into that right now. I think that any number that you pick or any rate of inflation you pick is going to move the rate of where the operating costs are going to either happen in 2012 or 2015 or 2020. Under our scenario with the 3.2%, we believe that we would actually not only be able to pay for the operating of the Tier 1 transitways that we've been talking to the committee about over the past couple weeks, but we also felt that we would have the ability to make a one-time investment into a capital investment into a project, be it Central Corridor or one of the BRTs or a few of the BRTs. That would have to be decided, but all of those things would still have to wait to be determined on how much inflation we really have. But we have the information available, and Arlene can go through it here, which will explain why we feel more comfortable with the 3.2 number. I know MnDOT used the number of 2.8. We were at 3.2. Generally, we aren't asked to build inflation into our budgets anyway. So this was quite a process for us to put this together. But the 5%, like I said, whatever number you choose is what's going to move that line, and we think that the 5% might be a little high.
And I recognize that, and we've talked about this. I mean, this was an exercise to try and get a handle on as we continue to add all these transit projects and the operating, and as the different things come online, and the proposed language for the MVEST transfer and the phase in. I mean, I don't think anybody is trying to set in stone that you're going to be at a 3.2% rate of inflation or 5% rate of inflation, but rather to have some illustrations under some different scenarios, what kind of dollars we're talking about, what's available, and for planning purposes, where we need to go to address transit needs as far as operating subsidies go.
Madam Chair, I recognize that. I just really wish that Mr. Walls would have never put that doomsday scenario on the board, because that would be a horrible position for any of us to be in.
Thank you. Mr. McCarthy, did you want to add anything? Or?
Certainly, Madam Chair. For the record, Arlene McCarthy, Director of Metropolitan Transportation Services with Met Council. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As we've all stated, there are a lot of assumptions in these scenarios, from the MVEST to the inflation factors and quite a few other costs, and they all have quite a large impact on this. And so, as Mr. Shipman said, we acknowledge that at some point the expanded operating system will require the 38% of MVEST. It's a matter of timing on where these lines cross, given all these various assumptions going out into the future. But regarding the inflation, the majority of the operating cost for transit is the wage and benefits package. That's right now about 84% of Metro Transit's operating package. And with the wages, the increase that's been assumed is basically 2.5% per year out to 2020. We did do this for the long term. The benefits includes, of course, health care, and that has been one of the higher increases. And that ranges from 5% to 9% over the years, but that's the smaller component compared to the wage increase. And so when we also have used some consultants to help advise us on the long-term projections for that health care. And we have definitely been changing our health care plans with our operating entities. So when
we put all that together and did a mathematical calculation, and we have also had a 3% increase on our non-salary, such as fuel, which is now at a higher level than it has historically been in our budgets because of our past experience. And the same could be said for utilities. So when we put that all together, because wages is, quite frankly, the 800-pound gorilla in this analysis, it averaged 3.15%, and we rounded up to 3.2, and that was the basis for our analysis, and we are comfortable with that, as I think has been acknowledged here today.
Mm-hmm. All right, any additional questions from the council? Any additional questions from Mr. Walls? Seeing none, one announcement. On Thursday, we will be hearing Eminent Domain, and we will be in the basement hearing room, so we'll see how many of you walk into the Environment Committee on Thursday, where they are hearing, I can't remember what bill, but mental note, basement on Thursday for Eminent Domain and a handful of other bills. And if there's no other business, then Representative Housen.
By noon.
Noon tomorrow, homework due. All right, the meeting's adjourned.